Blog Talk Radio.
No.
might wanna roll with me too. Said I don't mean to brag, but I live a life that most can only dream about. Yeah. So baby, come be my dream girl. Pick up fantasy and let me work out. Yeah. Oh yeah. Tell me where you wanna go. What you wanna do? So we live in it. Just let the drink flow. Later on you can come through, through, come through. You know you're the flyest. They should call you your highness. They call me king cause I'm that dude. All you gotta do is leave your crew. Said I don't need a brag, but I live a life that most can only dream about. Yeah. So baby, come be my dream girl. Pick up fantasy and let me work it out. Yeah. Oh yeah. Tell me where you wanna go. What you wanna do. So we live in it like we own it. Own it. Own it. To the most top of the world. What I need is you. So we live in it like we own it. Own it. Own it. Yeah.
For a reason, seeds born, elders die, all things in season. These days, I'm just trying to get in where I'm squeezing. Scratch that, I bust the game open till it's bleeding. That's that, D-Don Kimasi, Mau Mau Posse, guerrilla warfare, no man will ever stop me. Cause I run with tall black skinned Anunnaki, with 4 pounds of silver plated chrome in their pockets. But most days, I am non-violent, just don't cut my wiz and I remain silent. And when I speak, my truth weighs a ton. The scales tip as bricks of gold fall off my tongue. Your bars become stiff and cold as you succumb to the spit I hold between my molars for fun. Yeah, yeah, in all fairness, I get it from my daddy. In milk here, baby, raised up on the abbey. Offspring of ghetto life, crumbling brick and tragedy. They say that we have it good, I say that they imagine it. I came from Wardick, but soldiers stayed in war state. Anger see through jagged teeth cause they couldn't get a warm plate. I made it out with a number 2 in the clean slate. Dirty conscience haunts me when I shouldn't even be a quick. Cause I was born in the 80s just like my friends was. But now I'm getting texts about this from my overdose. And not that he was my closest friend, but I hold him close. He lived across the street in apartment B where they sold the dope. And yes, I'm going on a tangent. My mind is running rampant and writing is the only way I handle it. The booth is like my cell therapy. Ass goodie. My words like food for the soul. Let go of the past with them. And past cathartic, this is life saving for me. 14 years old, slicing off what life gave upon me. But I had cake at Rustin, De La Soul, and brand new to say that hip-hop show me God is nothing short of purest truth. Sure, I do this to prove a point to my critics. Lyrics like fire, bullets, they seeking targets to finish. My limits have been crossed. Now I made it my business to personally master these rappers and pack shit with a ribbon. Presented to children who don't know how to tell the difference between a lie and authentic or being alive and just living. I'm here to tell you my vision with IMAX precision. My storyline is still building, the climax impending. But I am the protagonist, but I come out winning. The top is a long way from my start and humble beginnings. Finna get it like a champion, going after the pennant. Like mortgage pirates who siphon and red gold off of your pendant. Swinging the pendulum, trying to send it back to the middle. When it's settled, I'm telling you, I'll have mastered the rhythm, 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 rhythm.
Me without a mic is like a bee without a snare. Don't you even go there. Tear into your ego. Freestyle with no rehearsal. Me without a mic is like a bee without a snare. Don't you even go there. Tear into your ego. Freestyle with no rehearsal. Don't you even go there.
You're in your mind, oh mind. Peace, peace, peace. Welcome to High Frequency Radio. You're on a Tuesday show, which is hosted by Brother Sharif. Today is Tuesday, January the 21st, 2014. We are live. The call-in number is 424-222-5250, 424-222-5250. Dial 1 if you have a question. Press 1, rather. If you don't have a question, please don't press 1. Just remain in queue and you'll be able to listen. Just remain on the call by just dialing the number and you will be able to listen. If you have a question, that is the only time you will press 1. Got an interesting show here today. I'll be going into some definitions, some particulars, and addressing some issues that I am finding. Okay, I'll also go over some current events and news. All right, this show will be, from this point on, including today, a two-hour show. Can't do 3 hours and four-hour shows. I think that's a little bit much for the type of information that we discuss. We don't try to give marathons here. I'm just trying to give enough to get people going. In addition to the webinars we may offer, which are additional training geared towards the consumer debt collection arena, I think that would be suffice. So I'm going to cut the music short, try to get on a line in between 11:10 and 11:15 and give you 2 hours of all that I have and be able to go and conduct my day and do the things that I'm obligated to do in addition to this show. So hopefully everybody understands that. As you guys well know, I do get around to answering most of my emails, and I do make it a goal of mine to reach each and every question, if at all possible. And I'll continue to do that. But we're going to narrow this down to a two-hour show. It becomes a little bit of an inconvenience when I invite guests on and we're on here 3 or 4 hours. Most shows out there are 2 hours. Those that give you 3 and 4 hours, that is great. And I've done so for a while, but that's a little bit excessive for me. It kind of breaks up my morning and my afternoon, and I pretty much don't get much done throughout that day. All right. Email address you can reach me at is thelawmaster44@yahoo.com, thelawmaster44@yahoo.com. You can send an email to me. I will put you on the emailing list as well. If you had short questions, specific questions, I make an effort to get around to all of those and answer those. Those questions are a little bit more extensive, may require some additional consulting or conversation, and that's available as well. All right. High Frequency Radio email address is highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com. You can also get on that email address. If you had questions for the network as a whole, or mainly if you have questions about the brother Youssef and the brother Savage, you know, they can be reached with that email address as well. As well, you can be put on the mailing list, which is the mailing list for the entire network. All right, that's highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com. I'm going to take 1 minute break. I need to gather some materials here, and then we're going to go into the show. Appreciate everybody being here. Hope all is well and healthy, and we'll be starting the show in just about 1 minute.
Yeah. Fly. It's Rick Ross, it's L.A. Reef flow right here. Maybe a wine in hold up. Sometimes I rhyme slow, sometimes I rhyme quick. Sometimes I buy flow, so I supply bricks. Motherfuckers looking at me sideways, but can it tell that I'm getting money by way? Lot of leather wood and it's deep vibrate. Chatting with a bitch like your boy, yo, my space. But she right here in my face. Take her to a fly place with a fly fireplace. No marshmallows, we had the drove burn. I done seen the world, girl, it's your turn. I told you lies all my life, but you hold me down, wrong or right. So it's only ride, she get that Porsche truck. All black, black rims, call her Porsche. Let your weed blow in the wind, cause believe every deed, boy, I need a friend.
Then can we get away and enjoy it,
so when I like a bitch, I am this Mario. Feet of Larios, love a glow with Gloria. That's a fine Andy Milio. Baby Billy though, it's your best bet. It'll be 6 O's in my next check. With a gun in hand, I always been a money man. Crack running man, fat Randall Cunningham. Look kid, I'ma tell you like this. We need time just to kick it like this. She licking my lips, she digging my kiss, so we did it like this. It's Rick Ross, I'm the man of the hour. She love to make love, and we can in the shower. Back against.
Let's get ready to rumble!
All right, we're gonna go into the show. I'm gonna cover a few things on this show. One, I'm gonna address a couple of concerns with the community as it relates to the consumer protection laws and statutes as it pertains to filing of lawsuits. I'm going to also offer you some information and books that you can obtain yourself to broaden your understanding of the consumer protection laws. I'm also going to talk about a few other things, some current events that is going on in the debt arena. I want everybody to understand, first of all, that this show is about debt. This show may address other types of debt, for example, foreclosure, mortgage, but this show is not a foreclosure show. Okay? It is also, because I receive emails saying, do you help with foreclosure prevention? All right. I don't know where that word came from. I don't do foreclosure prevention. I might do asset protection, estate protection, but I don't do foreclosure prevention. And I'm going to explain to you why. The utilization of words will either get you in trouble or get you out of trouble. And I'm going to go in and explain to you what I mean by that. First of all, I wanted to let everyone know, those of you that attended the webinar on January 11th between myself and the priest Elishua Yahweh, there were some issues with the audio, the webinar not playing. Many of you have corrected that, but for those of you, there is a codec that I can email you if you have an issue with it. One of the good listeners, Brother Vince, honors to him, we called and we figured out what the issue was, because there was a couple of times I pulled up the audio and it skipped through my entire monologue and went directly to the priest portion of the webinar. But then once I didn't play with it or try to forward it, it played in its entirety. So there is GoMeeting. I don't think I'm going to use GoMeeting again, but there is a Kodak, which is a program, and I'm not the computer whiz. I'm not a Geek Squad member. So there is a program that if you're having that issue, I know certain computers play different programs, I can email you that codec and your audio should play in its entirety and you shouldn't have an issue. It was demonstrated to me and demonstrated by me, so I know it works. So those of you, just email me at thelawmaster44@yahoo.com if you're having trouble with the webinar, but I believe from all the webinars that went out, nearly 50, everybody had ease pulling it up, and some didn't. All right, so now that is out the way, I'm going to go over some current events, and then I'm going to go into really the meat of my show, and then I'm going to get to the calling line and take some calls since we're only on a two-hour show. All right, just some recent news in the foreclosure, and I'm going to break down what I mean by foreclosure arena, some recent news that has occurred. There was in California, I know when we had the webinar, the last webinar with myself and the priest Elishua, I received an abundance of emails that requested or made a request or asked a question as to whether we were going to cover adverse possession. And I get a lot of those emails and a lot of people inquiring about that. As you know, many people have done adverse possession. Some of them have gone through. Some of them met challenges, which included being incarcerated. All right. One of those examples of adverse possession was our illustrious priest that was on the phone. He did adverse possession, and he did it correctly, okay? But he was still met with a challenge that resulted in him being incarcerated for nearly 2 years. He did beat his case, but he spent 2 years in a cage where he should not have, okay? And I'm going to get into why that's a big deal, all right, after I go into this news. But speaking of adverse possession, there was in California, the Attorney General Kamala Harris, which I believe she has some melanation in her. I don't know if she's mixed or, but she's a high yellow female. And you know, California did the Homeowner Bill of Rights, so they've been coming out with some statutes or laws that will assist people dealing with wrongful foreclosure. And I want everybody to pay attention to my words because I'm a wordsmith, all right? And if you're going to do anything within law or if you're going to be successful in any type conversation, you need to be a wordsmith. If you're going to deal with children and you ask them a question and they dance around the answer, you need to be a wordsmith. You need to be able to bring someone back to you and be able to get an answer if you're going to deal with anything about the law. But getting back to what I was saying, in California, the attorney Kamala Harris filed a criminal complaint against, I believe it's roughly about 6 or 7 attorneys. I believe they were arrested because I have the felony complaint here. And what they were doing in California is adverse possession. They were finding properties. They were doing adverse possession upon those properties, and then they were filing quiet title actions to clear those properties using, of course, their safe haven, which is the court system. All right? The complaint was filed January 14, 2013, and it's the people of the state of California versus Craig Merrill Mortensen, Sandra Elaine Barton, Christopher Spencer Barton, Cambria Lisa Barton, Daniel Paul Vindenoff, Sheldon Wayne Feigl. So it sounds like it's a few Bartons in there. They might be related, as most of these law firms, they are members of the same family. But you should Google that and read the felony complaint filed by the state of California. And the causes of action against them are for offering false or forged instrument for filing, which is what all of these banks do, preparing false evidence, perjury by declaration, subordination of perjury, offering false or forged instrument for filing, and preparing false evidence. So it seems like the same criminal charges was levied against each of the lawyers, all right? So the attorney general alleges that they did nearly in between $500,000 and $1 million in property theft using adverse possession. I've sent that article out to most of you that are on the emailing list, and that should address some of the questions about whether you should do adverse possession. Also, when I speak of the priest, that should be another example on whether you want to do adverse possession. Clearly on my show, I try to and do my best to address the facts, things that will work for you and not subject you to any type of criminal charges or even civil charges. Okay? I try to give you information that you may see laws on the book that might be just. They might be recently amended. They might be in its purest form and says that you can do X, Y, and Z. And adverse possession is legal when done properly, okay? And we all know that. But if it's going to subject you to jail, I don't think any of you think it's worth it to go to jail for trying to take the property. I already told you my personal feelings about it, and those are my personal. These are my morals and values. I don't think I should any property, okay, that I didn't pay for, all right? I don't think it's fair to others that do pay, and I don't think others around you, the majority, of course, that pays for something, thinks that you should be able to go and take property and not pay for it, whether it's on the books or not. Now, we know that adverse possession is real, but I just showed you that our priest did adverse possession, and he wound up in a cage. And if he had the choice, because him and I speak often, he would have done it differently if it was going to put him in a cage. All right? As you see, these attorneys were locked up and are going, they're facing, by the way, 100 years collectively. 100 years. Okay, they not only did adverse possession, but they used the court. They filed false affidavits, declarations. They just used the court like many of the banks and a lot of the attorneys. They used the courts for their personal piggy banks. And they did what everybody else does to an extent. But, you know, maybe they wasn't in the circle of circles, okay? Or maybe they wasn't connected with the right circle. Or maybe they just didn't pay their fees to the appropriate people. I don't know. Or maybe the state is just wising up against everybody doing that. I don't think it's the latter. I think it might be one of the former reasons that I gave. Okay, so adverse possession, if you just to go ahead and eliminate any calls or requests about that, I stay away from it because I think it will lead the community down a lane that they will not be able to defend, or they may spend a couple of years in jail only to defend it successfully, but it's going to take a couple of years out of your life. And I don't think anybody wants to do that for property. All right? I want to go into a couple of other things. First of all, there is quite a bit of the community that is really applying themselves to the consumer debt arena. All right? And I didn't begin this show to make it a foreclosure show. I brought this show to talk about debt, any kinds of debt, be it a utility bill, be it a cell phone bill, be it a credit card, be it an automobile, be it a mortgage, a loan of any caliber. That is debt. All right, and this show is about debt. Now, many of you may say and think and feel, and you will have many out there that will often misconstrue the meaning, the definitions of certain words. And you have to, and it's my obligation and responsibility to make sure you know what words mean. You cannot lump legal words together and give it a common meaning. They don't have common meanings. Everything in law is very precise. It is done for a reason, spelled for a reason. It is in quotations for a reason, okay? It is in that order for a reason. There is nothing that is a mistake in law. That's why I try to preach upon you to learn the rules so you know what the rules are. Because in order for you to hire an attorney, you have to know what an attorney is supposed to do. Okay? So there's no substitution for learning the rules, learning the law. Okay? And I'm not saying that this show is a substitution for you getting an attorney. Because what this show will do for you is to give you a better understanding of what the attorney is supposed to do. And there are times, surprisingly, that you will be able to aid your attorney or assist your attorney or give your attorney some alternatives or some strategies that he didn't think of or he knew. Okay? Trust me, that happens. All right? So when I say that, I want people to understand what are debts, which is what I definitely do, what are not debts, who are creditors, who are debt collectors. Okay, and that's very important for you to understand that you don't lump them together. And there are certain people out there that will lump everything together because they don't take the time to educate themselves on one specific topic long enough to be able to master it. And I'm speaking of anybody who, of an attorney who might tell you, oh, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I had a very interesting meeting last week with an attorney, and I'm going to share it with you, okay? And I'm going to tell you what I mean by that, how you need to understand what words mean, because you may indirectly or directly acquiesce yourself to some debt and don't realize you're doing it. Okay, so I'm going to break that down for you today, and hopefully you'll have an understanding of when I say certain words, or these words are said to you, that you understand. Let's go into the meaning of foreclosure. As many of you email me, say, I'm in foreclosure. Well, Sharif, I'm in foreclosure. I got a foreclosure sale next month. Or, you know, a particular lender did a foreclosure. Okay. Now, let me explain to you what you're saying and what you mean. And when you get on the phone talking to people that cannot legally foreclose or never legally foreclose, let me tell you how that's handled. The legal definition of foreclosure is the system by which a party who has loaned money secured by a mortgage or deed of trust on real property requires sale of the real property to recover the money due, unpaid interest plus the cost of foreclosure when the debtor fails to make payments. After the payments on the promissory note have become delinquent or several months behind, the lender can have a notice of default served on the debtor. So I'm going to stop there. So we all know that foreclosure is performed by a lender that has lent money. Did y'all hear what I said? That's the act of foreclosure. Okay? Now, I want to make this clear to the listening audience. If you are in foreclosure with a legitimate lender who has a perfected, and write that down, a perfected lien, and a legitimate loan agreement, mortgage, deed of trust, security deed, and you are in default to that lender, and it is a legitimate lender, meaning you have audited your own mortgage documents, you have audited the county recorder, and you determine that those instruments are not defective in any way, that the loan is held by the original creditor, there is no indication of securitization or selling or signing of that particular loan, and you've done your due diligence, and he decides, he or she or that artificial entity decides to foreclose because you breached some element of that legitimate, and I say legitimate, underlined contract, you are in foreclosure. And there will be hell and high water for you to get out of foreclosure unless you satisfy that monetary amount that you owe. I'm going to say that one more time. If you are in foreclosure with a legitimate lender who has lent you money, who is the original creditor, and you can ascertain that, okay, by demonstrating that everything appears to be intact. There's no evidence of any selling or signing or partial selling of the note or the mortgage
okay, stayed with the original lenders. Some examples of that may be a credit union, although they do securitize as well, a small local community bank, some of which do not participate in securitization. You are in foreclosure, and there is nothing that anybody can do for you. What can you do, Sharif, if you're in a legitimate foreclosure with a legitimate lender? Well, you can look over your contract, look over some of the communications and statements that you have, make sure that there are no breaches in that contract, okay? Let's say the lender is foreclosing because you missed $10,000 in payments. Maybe you might want to look at some of the communications, some of the statements, read your contract, for God's sakes, read your mortgage, your deed of trust, read your loan documents for a change. You may determine that there may be some violations in there amounting to $20,000. So what would you do, Sharif? You would call them and be like, hey, you know, I know I'm in default. I know you're a legitimate lender. I've looked over the entire documents. I've checked. I've did a full audit and accounting. And, you know, yeah, you're a legitimate lender. But, you know, there's some documents in there. There's some communications that you got that may be in violation of some consumer protection law or a breach of the contract in itself. So I calculate those breaches to be somewhere around $20,000. And when you sue me for foreclosure, I plan to assert those offenses and maybe counterclaim you for those violations. So what would that do? That would put them in a position to say, I have some set-off. That's write-off with you. You say I owe you 10. I say you violated any amount of 20. You want to call it a day? You just cure the default, and you and I go on, and I'll pay my payments from now on because I have a job. All right? Those are some of the things that you can do if you are in a legitimate foreclosure. But what you hear out there and what you are trained to believe is that you're in foreclosure. And I can tell you right now that if you have an assignment by MERS, if you have an assignment going to a secured, a REMIC, meaning that your alleged loan was securitized, if you have multiple assignments by parties and robo-signed documents, and I'm going to tell you right now and make this clear, you are not in foreclosure. The purpose of this show is to identify who's who, not theory, not rhetoric, not lumping everything together, is to identifying. Y'all know that is my favorite word. Are you a lender, a mortgagee, or creditor, or are you a debt collector? Well, what's the difference, Sharif? There is a huge difference. Okay, I just explained to you that a foreclosure can only be conducted by a lender or creditor that lent you money. I would venture to say most of you that are out there are not in foreclosure, because that particular act is not being performed by a legitimate party or a party authorized to do so. So are you in foreclosure? They want you to think you're in foreclosure, but simply you're not. Let me give you an example. Okay? If I am riding my horse down the road, and a police officer pulls me over and says, why don't you have a license plate on the damn horse? And he writes me a ticket for failure to have a license plate on a horse. I would look at him like he's crazy. He may write the ticket anyway. I will go to court and be like, I said, well, you received the summons, and my response would be, what summons? Well, did you not receive a citation? What citation? Or were you not riding some sort of a commercial vehicle? What commercial vehicle? Okay, I was riding a horse. So this officer can't write me a ticket for riding a horse than he can for riding a rabbit. Meaning that, what's the point I'm making? The point I'm making is that just because somebody does something does not make it so. Just because someone says something does not make it so. I read about a case last year, and there was a man out of California. And he was ticketed for speeding, driving, those commercial terms, and not having registration, tag, or something of the sort. And I read the whole case from the gentleman, and he was brilliant, which is where I adapted some of my defense strategies here. The man went into court, and they said, well, the judge said, you are ticketed here for driving without, you know, driving license, not having a tag. And he says, and the officer got in the stand. He said, I observed the gentleman driving his motor vehicle at a high rate of speed downtown. I subsequently pulled him over, you know, yada, 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 issued him a citation summons and da, 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 da. So the man said, what motor vehicle? And the prosecutor kept saying, why does he keep saying it? He keeps saying a motor vehicle. Were you not driving, operating a motor vehicle down or about this particular date and this particular time? And were you not, he said, and the man just kept saying, what motor vehicle? What are you talking? I don't have a motor vehicle. And the prosecutor just turned, he says, Judge, I wish you just really, this man is crazy. And to me, he said, Judge, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm trying to say, what is this man talking about? I never was driving or operating a motor vehicle. And he says, and he just looked at the judge, he kept looking at the man, and the man said, can you prove to me that I have a motor vehicle? And the judge said, well, just answer his question. Does he have a motor vehicle or not? He said, that prosecutor, he said, I'm looking on the ticket. It says you were driving a 2008 Dodge Ram truck, blah, 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 blah. He says, okay, were you not driving that vehicle? He says, no, I wasn't driving that vehicle. Okay, let me get to the point. The man said, you haven't proved that I was driving a motor vehicle based on the legal definition of motor vehicle. Was he challenging the court's jurisdiction? Of course. Did he have to say I'm challenging the jurisdiction? No, he just said, listen, you ticketed me in a regulatory activity that I was not involved in. So you never wrote me a ticket. And you never proved that I was driving a motor vehicle. Because if you try to prove that, idiot, you will be easily corrected. And it will easily be determined that I'm not in a damn motor vehicle, and I don't operate, because operate is an occupation. It's a commercial term. Speaking of terms, if a debt collector, okay, y'all know what a debt collector is, all right, hopefully you should know, pursuant to the Consumer Protection Laws, the FDCPA, let's just use that. A debt collector is in 1692A6, okay? If a debt collector tells you that they did a foreclosure, and many of you will email me, many of you will call me, I've been to court, I've seen many people, and I hear the attorney says 10 times, well, Judge, we conducted a foreclosure back on so-and-so date, and, you know, we have true title, and nobody ever objects to that. Well, Judge, you know, we conducted a foreclosure, and the foreclosure went through, and we did that, and everybody just sits there numb, and they say, well, they start arguing subject matter. Says, they didn't do that right, they didn't do it on the right date, and they didn't do this, and they didn't do that, and they're not getting it. What foreclosure is your first response? Foreclosure. I'm looking at documentation, and you appear to be a debt collector. You obtained this alleged loan that I have denied while it was in default, okay? That means you're a debt collector pursuant to 15 U.S.C. 1692. You are not a creditor pursuant to 1692A4. I am a consumer pursuant to 1692A3. You are collecting a debt as defined in 1692A5, okay? And pursuant to 1692I, let me read that for you so you understand what it is, okay? 1692I, any debt collector who brings any action on a debt against any consumer shall, in the case of an action to enforce an interest in real property securing the consumer's obligation, bring such action only in a judicial district or similar legal entity in which such real property is located, or in the case of an action not described in paragraph 1, bring such action only in the judicial district or similar legal entity in which the consumer signed the contract sued upon or in which the consumer resides. All right? So What did I just say? If a debt collector tells you that they did a foreclosure, why are you not objecting to it? And when you hear people out there that calls themselves knowledgeable on this topic, why do they never tell you that? Why do they talk about foreclosure or foreclosure this or foreclosure that? Or you need to get, or you hear the media says, well, you know, foreclosure consultants and foreclosure prevention specialists, you need to look out for those people. We're not foreclosure prevention specialists because, one, a debt collector cannot do a damn foreclosure. They're not a lender. Look up the definition of foreclosure, and then you understand why you're not in foreclosure. But if you don't object, then you're arguing the fact that they did a rightful foreclosure. That's why you always sue for tort claim wrongful foreclosure. You well, Judge, we did a foreclosure last month. I don't know what you did. I know it wasn't a foreclosure. Why? Because you are not authorized to do a foreclosure, sir. So I don't know what you conducted, but it was not a foreclosure. If you don't say that, then you're agreeing that they did a foreclosure, and then there's 100,000 case laws that will support a lender doing a foreclosure. So your answer is, Judge, I understand fully that a lender may do a legitimate foreclosure. I understand that if I don't pay my creditor or my mortgagee or my lender, that I may be subject to foreclosure. I understand that, and that you are 100,000% correct. And I understand foreclosure is a legal process. But what I am telling you is that this particular party does not have standing. They are not authorized. They are a third-party intervener. And they're strangers to any transaction. So I say to them, well, you didn't make your mortgage payment. And you know what Brother Sharif's answer is? So what? Who are you? If I write you a check to you individually, and you give it to your girlfriend to go cash it, the check is good. The teller may check and make sure the account is good. And for all intents and purposes, the account maybe has enough money in it to satisfy the check. But it's not written to you. Okay? So it might be a good check. Okay? It might be signed, endorsed properly. But the person who's trying to cash the check can't benefit from the check because it's not written to you. If you have a mortgage contract or a deed of trust, specific parties are named in those documents. It's important for you to read those documents and understand what's in them. Because if somebody goes to try to cash that check, which by example, which means try to foreclose and take your property, and they're not authorized, they can't cash that check. Based on that definition, are you really in foreclosure? And are you really seeking foreclosure prevention? Because that's like sovereign citizen. Understand what you're saying and understand what you need to object to. When somebody says, a third-party debt collector says, we did a foreclosure, be like, what foreclosure? We did this here, and this is the documents, and we advertised it in the newspaper, and we did that, and we put it down in the county recorder. So, yeah, you know, I understand that. You know, pretty much you can record anything in the county recorder. I can write something on a napkin, and they'll take it, and they'll stamp it for $3. And I do understand you did probably did some sort of advertising in a newspaper. I understand by now, and those of you that have been on my show long enough would know, I understand the mask that you're trying to wear and why you are trying to wear it. You're trying to act like you're a creditor and a lender, but you're not. So did you do a foreclosure? No. Let me go into why I say you didn't. Let's talk about void, okay, and voidable. And I don't think many of us understand the difference, and we need to. All right? What is void? So you hear a lot of things about, well, that's void, or you hear voidable. They're two distinct terms. They have different definitions. They are applied differently in different situations. So let me read to you what void means. Void means null, ineffectual, nugatory, having no legal force or binding effect, unable in law to support the purpose for which it was intended. Void does not always imply entire nullity, but it is, in a legal sense, subject to large qualifications. in view of all the circumstances calling for its application, and the rights and interests to be affected in a case, in a given case. Void as used in statutes and by the courts does not usually mean that the act or proceeding is absolutely a nullity. Okay, there is a difference between the two words void and voidable. Void means, listen carefully, void means that an instrument or transaction is so nugatory and ineffectual that nothing can cure it. That's what void means. Okay, voidable is when an imperfection or defect can be cured by the action or confirmation of him who could take advantage of it. All right? So understand what the difference of void and voidable is. Okay? So as it applies to contract, it has a greater importance when you applied void and voidable to contracts. If you're using it in a debt collection case, a credit card case, a mortgage case, it becomes a little bit of a more practical importance the way you use those words. Okay? And whenever entire technical accuracy is required, the term void can only be properly applied to those contracts that are of no effect whatsoever, such as a mere nullity and incapable of confirmation or ratification. Okay? We have to understand what void means. Okay? And the reason why I'm speaking of this is that you have a, if you have a debt collector, a party that does not have standing capacity to, in effect, a foreclosure, okay, then is that foreclosure, alleged foreclosure, void or voidable? I would subscribe that it's void, meaning that it was done by a party that wasn't authorized. When you're dealing with robo-signers, you deal with void. You try to effectuate a transfer of something that you didn't own and you wasn't authorized to. That means that transfer is void. Voidable just means it has some defect in it, or you didn't do it at the right time, or you didn't do it the right way, or you mailed it to the wrong place. Those type of actions or situations can be corrected, okay, meaning that they're voidable, which brings me to another situation that we find ourselves in. I'm getting many emails, and then people call in and say, well, you know, what should I do when I got a judgment and I want to set it aside? Understand that the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 60B motions, are for judgments that are voidable. Not void. Therefore, judgments that are voidable. So you got to understand when you use a Rule 60B to set something aside. Vacating, and just so I can make this clear, vacating a void judgment, not a voidable judgment, okay, you can do that by motion, but it's not a 60B motion, okay? So void judgment, meaning that you're asking the court to use its inherent power, okay, inherent power that's possessed by the courts to set that motion aside because it was void, period. A Rule 60B motion is to set aside something that's voidable, okay? Void means what? Give me an example, Sharif. Okay, someone sues you, and it's the wrong party. Someone does a foreclosure, the debt collector does a wrongful foreclosure. They're not the party that are authorized to do a foreclosure, okay? So you would go to the court, not in a 60B motion, you would say, hey, the court never acquired subject matter jurisdiction, nor personam jurisdiction, because the party that brought the action was not the real party in interest, therefore the subject matter jurisdiction of the court was not invoked, okay? So what you're saying is, it was void, court. Y'all never had jurisdiction. The plaintiff that came to you lied. They wasn't the real party in interest, Rule 17. Or they didn't have authorization, they didn't have standing or capacity to sue me or to bring an action because that action is reserved for creditors or lenders. They are neither. So did I go through a foreclosure? No, they tried to pretend they were doing one. They wanted me and the court to believe they did a foreclosure. And if you didn't object to it and deny that they ever did a foreclosure, regardless of what they said, especially if you're in a non-judicial state, how do you know they did a foreclosure? How do you know they're authorized? If I go out there and get a police officer and hit some government agent in the head and take their badge and their uniform and their police car and ride around, and as I'm riding around the road trying to play cop, I come upon this guy on the highway doing 90. So I'm going to decide, let me use this uniform that I stole and this police car that I stole, and let me pull him over. And he's going 90, all right? And I pull him over, and I play cop. So you can get your license, registration, your insurance, please. And I go on to pretend I'm not a licensed law enforcement officer. I'm not certified. I just took somebody's uniform and badge and police car, okay? So I turn around and wrote him a ticket. I said, that felt good because I'm always the one getting tickets, so I get the cop. So I wrote him a ticket. Is that ticket void or voidable? No, it's void. Wasn't performed by somebody authorized. That was a stolen uniform. Yes, he was in a police car. He looked like a police officer. He looked like a law enforcement official. It looks like a law enforcement citation, but he wasn't authorized. He was what? An imposter, right? You can go to jail for impersonation, correct? Y'all get my drift? You can go to jail like these attorneys are about to go to for doing adverse possession and putting declarations in the court and filing false documents in the county recorder acting as if they were creditors or they were owners of property, okay, called impersonation. Most of you that are out there that think you're in foreclosure are not in foreclosure. Do not be deceived. Do not listen to people that wants to tell you otherwise. You're not in foreclosure. Do not listen to an attorney that's going to say, Judge, you know, we did a foreclosure. You didn't do a goddamn foreclosure because you can't do one. You have no interest in the property. You have no monetary injury. You have no financial injury. You have no standing. You have no capacity or anything else. Stop playing games. I don't know who you are. Your name is not listed on any document, and the document you rely upon for standing, that assignment, is worthless. So you really didn't do anything, and if you did do something styled as a foreclosure, it really had no merit, and it's just clearly and easily void, not voidable. Voidable is the real lender does it, and he misses a step. Well, what's a step miss, Sharif? A step miss is you didn't give me notice as a condition preceding. You didn't give me proper notice. Therefore, since you didn't give me proper notice and you went on ahead in foreclosure and you are a legitimate lender, you are a legitimate mortgagee, but you missed a step, a procedural violation, then that means that foreclosure is voidable. Meaning that the lender can go back and correct the defect and continue on with foreclosure. Hopefully I made that clear. Okay, stop falling for things such as foreclosure. Understand terminology that people are using. Understand what the meaning of things are so you don't get caught up in the word game. Always play dumb. I had someone call me the other day and said, well, Sharif, what should I do? I'm going for a debt collection. I'm just you know, I can't tell you everything to do right now, but just go in there and just deny the existence of a debt. I mean, like, I don't know what debt you're talking about. I don't know who you are. Okay, I need discovery and trial to determine who you really are. Okay, I don't know what debt. What debt? No, do you recall? No, I don't. Is that your signature on that document? No, I can't say that's my signature on a document. I don't know where that document has been. It's not authentic. It's not an original. No, I got to deny that signature. I need to see the original and other documentation that goes along with it. Okay? So when someone says, well, we did a foreclosure last month, no, you didn't do a foreclosure last month because you're not a mortgagee. You're not a lender. Okay? No, you didn't send me out notice, Mr. Debt Collector. Because you sent me out a notice coming from the servicer when that agreement, if it is to be believed, and if it is a legitimate, authentic agreement, says that only the lender can execute certain provisions of this contract. You're not the lender. So you didn't issue me a notice of default. Because you can't. so I need to sue you for it. All right? So let me talk about lawsuits. And I want to say this as respectful as I can to the community. Okay? The consumer protection laws, the FDCPA, the FCRA, the TCPA, your state consumer protection laws, are, for the most part, very simple to understand. They were written for the least sophisticated consumer, which is who I refer to as Bubba and Auntie Belle. Okay? You have to take the time to read those statutes. You have to take the time to apply yourself to learning front and back these consumer protection laws. I do not subscribe to, nor do I preach on this show, for you to listen to one webinar, two shows, one conversation, and then go out there and start suing people in federal court. I never say that. I say study, understand what you're doing. I cannot give you an A to Z application on how to execute these things in one show or in two shows. It may take you some time to understand and to gain knowledge of this arena. But I'm not one on this show or on any show I may appear on, and I appear on a few of them. I am not about this download a document from the internet, put your name in it, and file it somewhere with you listening to one or two webinars and two or three shows. Excuse my language. You're going to get your ass handed to you. And I've received some emails from people that are clearly not ready to be filing any lawsuit. And this week I received a few emails of people saying, hey, I filed this lawsuit. Tell me what you think. They filed a motion to dismiss. What do you think I should do? I don't know where y'all got that from. You didn't get it from here. Because since I started this show, I believe November was my first appearance on this show as a guest. And subsequently, I became a host on the show. If you listen to that first show in November up to now, you may not be ready to file any type of lawsuit. You understand? Because what I go into is an understanding of who, one, what's a foreclosure, what's a debt collection activity, who's a debt collector, who's a consumer, what is a debt, what is not a debt, who is a creditor, and who is not. Communications that you can communicate with a debt collector, and communications that you can have with a creditor. What type of intercourse to have with them, and what type of intercourse not to have with them. Okay? These are all increments and levels of knowledge and information, and I haven't gotten to the point, well, how do you respond to a motion to dismiss? How do you respond to a motion for production of documents? How do you respond to discovery? How do you respond to a Rule 26 hearing? Do you know what to do in that situation? Most of you don't. But yet I'm getting people that's filing lawsuits talking about, read that, tell me what you think about that. Did you file that? You need to dismiss that because you're going to be subject to that defendant's attorney fees, which can get quite costly, and you're going to find yourself in a worse position than you were before you did that. You're going to send a lawsuit over, say, take a look at that and tell me what I do now because they filed a motion to dismiss. Are you serious? The way my daughter would say, really? This is not no cut and paste. Write something in a document, change the name and the title, and apply it to every circumstance you can think of. That is not common sense. It's not any advanced sense. And you don't get that from this show. Y'all need to learn A to Z. Stop being in a hurry to be filed. Stop taking shortcuts. Stop asking for the answers. Read the law. Complaints that just merely recite the consumer protection laws without stating a claim at all. I've seen complaints that say, yeah, you know, the FDCPA says this and that, and there's no evidence of a debt. I'm like, evidence? You're not even discovering. Like, what are you talking about? Like, how do you start off complaint talking about evidence? Like, what are you what's the violation? What did they do? There was a Supreme Court ruling, I don't know when, but it was recent, probably a year or two ago, because of the increase in consumer protection cases, all right, there was a substantial increase in these lawsuits being filed. These defendants, debt collectors, sometimes, well, all the time have to defend these cases, okay? And it takes money, all right? And there was one suit where a lady took it all the way up to the Supreme Court where she lost. She was the plaintiff, and the court told her to pay the defendant's attorney fee, so she appealed it. And the Supreme Court said, no, I mean, you got to pay his attorney fee. If you brought that action and you didn't know what you were doing and you failed to state a claim upon which relief can be granted and you don't know what the hell you're doing, yeah, you can't be suing anybody frivolously. Those are one of the things I tell you that they do to you. Why would you do it to them? If you don't know what you're doing, don't do it. And I say to everybody all the time in this community that there's nothing on this show that I teach or preach or state or give my opinion on that would stop you from getting an attorney. In fact, I think you're smart enough if you study those laws to be able to get an attorney and say, this is what I need to be done, and this is why, and this is what you need to do, and this is what, you know, you understand what I mean? Because he gets attorney's fees. You don't have to pay an attorney on a strong consumer protection case. You don't. He can get his attorney fees from the defendant because that attorney would be able to determine whether your case has any merit. And he won't bring it if he feels he can't get his fees because he's on the hook for the work. If you don't know what you're doing, and very many of you don't, you need not to be filing lawsuits against anybody, especially a bank or an attorney or your next door neighbor, because they might decide to run and get an attorney and give you the business, which means attorney's fees. Let's be smart. One of the problems in our community is that we don't want to read or apply ourselves. We want to be so broad in our information. We want to be the master of everything, but we don't have a handle on one. We don't want to read an instance. We don't want to study. We spend more time watching TV than we do studying the laws. And you want to download somebody's document or take it. Because the documents that are out there, there's some that I do as samples just to let you see how certain pleadings look. These things were not provided for you to go stick your name in it and file it somewhere. I seen some pleading on example that came from somewhere else, and the name of the other person who had the complaint, the names of the parties were still in there. They just changed the name but didn't change the name everywhere. All kind of typographical errors in it. It's just ridiculous. Don't file any lawsuit against anybody. I don't care if you're in district court or small claims court. Yes, small claims court is a little bit more informal, but you can be hit with attorney fees in small claims court too. Depending if your state allows attorneys to come in small claims court. Some states don't allow them. Some states do. So if an attorney shows up in small claims court and you filed a frivolous suit or a suit without any merit, you can be hit with attorney's fees. Some of you are going to understand that because some of the lawsuits that I've seen or some that I've heard about or other people from other groups share with me, I'm just like, what are you doing? This is not for people that listen to two shows or have two meetings with their groups and decide to go sue. You have to have an understanding. You have to spend time studying and understanding not only the plaintiff side but the defendant side, not only the rules of court, federal court, but the local rules. You have to know what procedural violations are there, okay? That's like me going to college and getting a degree in 4 years and trying to teach you everything I know in a month. It's just not going to happen. Let's stop making these mistakes and stop trying to take shortcuts and stop this downloading, cutting and pasting, and using other people's situation and think it's identical to ours. They're not. Each situation is different. Each foreclosure is different. Each debt collection lawsuit is different. There are procedural things that are the same, but each situation has to have its own story. And it's not that difficult. The things that I'm telling you to study is not 20,000 pages of something. But you got to take the time to study it. FDCPA is not long. FCRA is not long. Your state consumer protection laws are not long. They're simple. But if you don't want to take the time to learn and study and know how to do offense and defense, you're going to fail in your pursuit against that debt collector. And then you're going to face res judicata, meaning that you screwed up the first time. You can't even bring it again. If you don't know what you're doing, get you an attorney and learn based on what he does. Or get next to somebody that knows what they're doing, even if you have to compensate them in some way or another, or you hire an attorney, at least you'll be able to see how it's done. And then you'll be able to duplicate that if the contents of that issue lines up with another issue that you experience that are similar. Please stop doing this nonsense. None of y'all are ready to go in court if you have questions. Like, what do I do when they file a motion to dismiss? Or what do I do when they ask for discovery? How do I answer those questions? Are you serious? You filed a lawsuit and you don't know what to do? Please stop doing this, really. And that's not something you get from this show. All right? You have to have principles. You have to have knowledge, okay? And rigid principles obstruct all the time, obstruct effective problem solving if you don't know what you're doing. Rigid principles obstruct effective problem solving if you don't know what you're doing. You can't study too much. You need to know this stuff. Let me tell you about a conversation I had, and then I'll go to the caller line. I had a meeting last week with a group that works for the Obama Task Force. Okay? It is an omnibudsman, a couple of CPA accountants, a couple of paralegals, and they went to Washington at some point and they were accepted to form this Obama task force against wrongful foreclosures and things of that nature. All right? I met them, coincidentally, I met the lady that spearheads that particular task force, and we began talking about things, and of course there was an instant connection because of my knowledge about that particular arena. All right? So we talked on a couple occasions. You know, I was very curious as to how this task force works and whether it's effective, and, you know, and she gave me her, you know, opinion on those things. But at any rate, what she does is go to court and help people during foreclosures, and she has an omnibusman, which is an elderly gentleman, and, you know, he pretty much really didn't know much. But, you know, they get a list, you know, the people are able to, the government provides them with a list or the number to this group if they're having foreclosure difficulties. And, you know, the task force is able, they get those lists and calls and requests from people for assistance. And they try to move these people into modifications or, you know, try to, they're authorized to go to court with these individuals and testify as expert witnesses. Excuse me. So, she's a accountant. She's a tax accountant at that. She's very knowledgeable in the IRS, so we talk about a lot of things. And she says, well, Brother Sharif, I'd like you to come, based on your knowledge and experience, I'd like you to come and join the task force team. And I said, no, I'm way too busy for that. I wouldn't be interested. She said, well, will you come to a couple of meetings and share some of your knowledge and wisdom with us, or come to court and just, I said, let me see what you're doing. All right, so I went to court with her on a case. And I seen what they were doing, and they were in the lower court and dispossessory court, and they were talking about securitization and bifurcation and all this other stuff, and they were testifying up there, and the judge was letting them testify as expert witnesses, and they were looking, and I peeped the whole scheme, and I said, okay, well, they lost every case that was before them, most of them, or got continuances, which will result in a loss for them. And I sat back, and I went back to the office with them, and I said, you guys are doing everything wrong. And he said, well, you sort of figured that. And so the government doesn't really give us much help. They just, you know, they send us the people and they pay their expenses. And, you know, they make decent money going to court with the people and going on. And she says, well, Brother Sharif, I wanted to get, you know, it's hard to find good lawyers in Nevada, you know, to help people in defense of foreclosure. I said, because that's because for the most part, you're not in foreclosure. Okay? And you're letting them say that there was a foreclosure or that you're in foreclosure and you're not in foreclosure, because none of these people that I seen here today, out of six cases that went, I spent the whole day there, were lenders, okay? There were some capital investment groups coming in there doing an eviction. We're like, well, when did you become financially injured by anything that had to do with this transaction? So I said, you guys need to really, and it was two paralegals, okay, some accountants, and they didn't know their head from their feet. So she said, we need to get an attorney. And I said, it's hard to find attorneys. I refer them to attorneys, and then these attorneys really don't do much for them. They just take a lot of money from them, and the results are the same. I said, of course, that's the way it is. Because, first of all, you don't realize you're not in foreclosure for the most part. Okay? So she says, well, I want you to go to a meeting with me, Sharif, tomorrow to meet this other attorney that's called me, and because I'm with the task force, he wants to get some of the business because she gets an abundance of clients in foreclosure. So she said, I want you to meet with this attorney and tell me what you think about him. I said, sure, I'll come. So I met, went to a restaurant, we sat down, and the attorney came in. And I know when he walked in, I knew he was an attorney. He was old. He was about 69 years old. Maybe 69 years old, okay? Elderly Caucasian man, walked real slow, came in, had white hair, and some false teeth. And I'm just being funny, but I'm just saying he was, you know, he was the average attorney. So I said, there's your attorney right there. She said, how do you know? I said, I just know. Okay. So he walked over, he introduced himself. You know, he sat down. She had two clients there that were in foreclosure. And you know, they were, all the clients that they get through this task force are usually people that's not on good economic standing, meaning they don't have much money, or at least they poor mouth, you know, that administration or that program, because they feel it's government fed, so they feel they should get something free or almost free. So this particular person, a Billy Bob, was there going through a foreclosure, and you know, she had a case of all these different processes and procedures. I mean, she had all of them, some of which I've talked about on the show. Okay, she had all of that. I mean, she had literally a case. She's filed cases in state court, in district court, in that court. She did some deed process. She did everything. I said, did you do all of that? She says, yes, I spent nearly $20,000 having attorneys ghost write for me. This one did that. I paid for that process. I paid $4,000 for this process. She spent $20,000, which is why she said she didn't have any money. She says, I'm down to my retirement funds. So to fast track, the attorney started talking. He came in, and she says, well, you know, how much experience did you have in foreclosure? He says, well, I was in California, and, you know, he was talking real slow. And she says, well, we got a dispository coming on Monday, and this is the case we wanted to give to you, but it's Monday, and this was Friday that we met. And she says, well, how are you going to handle that? You know, it's last minute. And the attorney says, well, you know, let me be honest with you and tell you this. He says, the first thing he asks for, he says, what race is the plaintiff attorney? And I kind of looked. I was stunned. And she looked at me, and she says, well, for this case, he's a black attorney. He said, okay. And he didn't say anything else. I look, and he says, okay, so tell me about the case. He said, well, I did, you know, this is foreclosure. They did the foreclosure last month, and yada, 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 yada. And he says, okay. He says, well, look, I'm going to have to get a continuation, and I'll get the continuation. And you did say the gentleman was black, right? And she said, yes. He said, okay. He said, okay. As you guys know, I worked on the banking board. He started throwing out his accolades, and he says, I worked on the banking board, and I came from California. And, you know, he started talking about some cases. Now, the man talked real slow. But, see, I'm able to understand because I've been in this arena so long and spoke to attorneys. I know how they talk. And they may talk slow, but the man had knowledge and wisdom. So I'm always going to learn something from somebody like that, okay? And I was quite grateful that I had an opportunity to talk to somebody that had gotten up in age and been in a legal society. I always do. Anyway, the man went on, and I said, what's your tactic as far as, you know, you're going to have to do a continuation Monday, or they may lose the eviction to this dispensary tomorrow, or on Monday. And he says, yeah, I'll be getting continuation. If not, you know, I'll just appeal it and to the state or the superior court. And he says, and I says, okay. And I'm asking him questions, because let me make y'all understand this. I ask tough questions. There's nobody that I will meet that I will not ask tough questions, especially an attorney. Okay? I don't pet them. Okay? I don't bow to them. I have mutual respect. And I'm always leaving that conversation getting something out of asking questions that I need to know, or asking questions to make a determination of whether they know what they're doing. So he went on and he says, you know, we can appeal to the status. He said, let me tell you something about superior state court judges, all right? He was talking real slow. He said, okay, look, those judges in the state and the superior court are elected. He said elected by the Congress, okay? They run for those seats. Let me make y'all understand something. This is what the attorney says. He says, they do not get elected by the defendants winning their cases, because none of the defendants or the people vote these people into those judge chairs. Okay? They run. And the people that finance their campaign are what? Lawyers, law firms, companies, corporations. And, of course, if she's going to get reelected, she's got to put out a good abundance of cases for the plaintiff, because the people that won their dispository case or foreclosure case are not coming by back and be like, yeah, you know, vote for Judge Pipenhocker, all right? They're not doing that. It's the attorneys that be like, well, you know, she's doing a pretty good, yeah, we won those cases, yeah, you know, we're going to vote for Judge Pipenhocker, all right? So that was something that I just never thought of. You know, but he went on, he says, now, it's a possibility you might get this in the district court. And see, the district court judges, okay, they're appointed for a lifetime. And the folks that were at the table other than me really didn't understand what he was saying. He says, I want to get it in the district court, okay, where the judges are appointed and don't give a goddamn about running or campaign contributions or things of that nature. But he went on to say that, let me tell y'all something about this foreclosure thing. And this is the point I wanted to get to. He said, in order for me to get this case started, I'm going to need $4,000 today. And I looked and I said, okay. And he said, that's going to carry you through from here to appeal and knock on the door of the federal court, and then I'm going to need another $2,000. He's up to $6,000 now. He's telling you in the next 4 to 6 weeks he's going to need $6,000. He said, let me make y'all understand something. She says, well, are you going to get me quiet title and all this other stuff that I hear people talk about? You're going to get me quiet title, and I'm not. Am I not going to have to pay a mortgage? And she's just ranting on. And he says, let me go on and be honest with y'all and tell you this. He didn't say be honest. He said, let me tell you this. There is a very low percentage of people that leaves the court without paying a mortgage. And he quoted a case that I knew about off the top of my head in New York, where a $480,000 mortgage was wiped off the court, just said, you don't have any mortgage no more. Because the conduct of the debt collector was so egregious that they were like, you know what, y'all just really was acting like some hardcore criminals, and we can't sanction or justify that type of behavior. So we're going to wipe the mortgage out. So he mentioned that case, and I knew the case by name. But he says, for the most part, I'm just telling you right now, I may get you to a point where you can do some modification or do some mitigation or workout with them, maybe to reduce your payments or reduce the amount, principal deduction, things of that nature. He says, but it's very rare that you will be able to quiet title and do all those things. He said, I'll do it for you. Okay? He says, I will do it for you. But it's very unlikely that the courts will see it that way because you have judges. And the same thing I tell people, you got judges sitting on the benches paying their mortgage, family paying their mortgage. Okay? All right? So, again, my point is if you are in foreclosure with a legitimate lender, you need to work something out. But I don't think most of you are in foreclosure with a legitimate lender. That's how I will preface that. All right? So the attorney says, okay, so I'm going to bring you to the table, and then you're going to have to work something out with them because the court's not going to allow you to walk out with a quiet title. I'm just telling you, it's rare. Okay? So she looked at me when he said that, and I looked at her, and I talked with the attorney, and him and I, he got acclimated. I mean, he loved me to death because I was able to talk his language, and we talked about some other things. I asked him some difficult questions. He took a liking to me, and then we came back to the issue at hand, and he says, okay, so that's what's going to happen. So that's the type of money. She says, well, I don't have that type. He says, well, then you're not going to be able to hire me, and I won't take any cases from this task force unless people have the money. So she looked at me, and she says, Brother Sharif, should I hire him? And I said, yes. And she looked and she said, why? I'm going to tell you why, and I'm going to tell all of you why I would hire him. He was an old man. He's well-connected. He's going to go in that court, okay, although he's late, and the judge is going to see that white hair. She's going to know he's fully connected in the community. He said, I worked on the bank, and I got this, and I was here, and I was vice president of this, and I was the chairman of the board of this. You understand what I mean? The knowledge and the wisdom is going to take over the judge. She's going to allow him to make his money, okay? She's going to continue the action. He's going to talk with the other attorney and be like, make your money, I make mine, all right? He's going to buy you some time, okay? But the result is he's going to bring you to the table with the lender and be like, now y'all work it out. What's going to be acceptable for you? You can't do 2,000 payments? How about 1,500? I'll drop the interest rate. I'll do this. I'll do that, da, 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 da. Right? That was his whole strategy. And I said, hire him. Why? Because you've done all, you got a crate of stuff you've done by yourself, all kind of procedures and processes. And I mean, this lady had, when I say a crate, I'm talking about a crate. She said, you want to look over my documents? I said, not a chance. I can look at all that and tell it's garbage because you're still here. Okay? So you bought yourself some time. Hopefully you saved some money, all right? And I said, you need to hire this man because he's already told you he's going to do a dog and pony show for you. But the ending result is you're going to have to work it out. Now, if you're smart, and anybody who will listen to that conversation smart enough to say they're going to do one or two things, they're going to say, well, let me hire the attorney, all right, because it's going to buy me some time. And or a smart one would say, well, if that's all you're going to do, you're going to take $6,000 from me, and then you're going to turn around and bring me to the table to work it out. Why don't I get on the damn phone and do what you're doing my damn self? You think the bank wouldn't talk to me if I talk about working out a deal with a damn debt collector? Of course they would. No, I don't need to hire you. I'm going to keep the $6,000. I'll do it myself. But at this point, they had been so beaten up by the processes and all the money that they spent. This lady spent almost $20,000 that I said, you need the comfort of an attorney, somebody that knows what they're doing, even if it's just procedurally. The court will listen to you more because you don't know what the hell you're talking about, so you need him to talk. And if it buys you another 6 months to a year and you were supposed to pay $1,000 a month for the next 6 or 12 months, it saves you $12,000. And you gave him six. See, you have to have strategy when you're going into any type of litigation. You can't just say, oh, yeah, that was wrong. I got him on that. I got him on that. And, yeah, they did that, and they did this, and they did that. You got to have strategy. What is strategy when you're in foreclosure? Well, you can file a lawsuit that may buy you time. That in itself is a strategy if you're in a legitimate foreclosure. It may buy you time. It may give you the opportunity to build up some more money. And let's talk about money. I do not understand most of people out there, not just in this community, that hasn't paid a mortgage payment for 2, 3, 4 years and then come to somebody for help, an attorney or anybody else, and say you don't have any money. Well, what have you been doing with your money for the last 2 or 3 years? Or have you just got conditioned to not making a payment? See, this is how the courts look at it. Okay? There has to be strategy. Everything I talk about on this show, if I don't do anything, I know how to do strategy. Because I mentioned some strategies to the attorney, and he was like, you and I got to talk. Why don't you come by my office after this meeting? Okay? You and I got to talk. You're pretty sharp. I'm not bragging on me. What I'm good at is strategy. Looking at the entire situation, each situation is different, not applying the same principles to every situation. Looking at strategy, what is my goal? Well, I don't have a job, Brother Sharif, so I get my income tax in February. I'm facing foreclosure in January, so I need some time. So I might say, okay, strategically, why don't you just go ahead and do this and this and this and that? That'll buy you some time. You'll be able to get your taxes in, and you'll be able to catch up your mortgage. That's strategy. Okay? That's strategy. So what is your strategy? Always have a strategy when dealing with debt or debt collectors. Always assume that you're going to lose at every turn. And let me tell you, when you're going to the courts, yes, you are dealing with a corrupt judicial system for the most part. Yes, you are dealing with slick, slimy, deceptive debt collectors and sometimes attorneys. Absolutely. That is no secret. But you have to be prepared. And you hear people out there saying, well, I used to do it, but you know, I used to do it this way. But, yeah, I know a lot of people that did all these processes and procedures. I know a lot of people that was arguing foreclosure. And I'm just like, if you would just understand what a damn foreclosure is, you would stop arguing foreclosure because they got a ton of cases to throw at your ass. When you're talking about foreclosure, that's why I say stay in your lane. Identify who you're talking to. Are they a creditor or are they a debtor, a debt collector? It's a difference, and the laws are different for them. But if you allow the debt collector to talk like a mortgagee and you allow them to say that long enough, then you sort of acquiesce to the fact that, hey, you are a creditor. If you allow them to send you a document that's an instrument used by a lender and they're a debt collector and you let them get away with that without challenging that, then you agree that they're a damn creditor. If you do a modification with a debt collector, and if you read your paperwork, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't do a modification, because if you're not educated and you're not skilled enough to put up these type of defenses or offenses, then work out a modification. If it keeps you and your family in your home, work it out. But in that modification, let me go ahead and tell you, you are waiving a whole lot of defenses. Why? Because you entered into an agreement with this debt collector, so they're not a debt collector anymore. They're actually offering you credit or services. Meaning that can you sue them later for that? No. The court would say, well, okay, it's your job to know who you're dealing with. If they wasn't a creditor, why did you sign this documentation with them? Okay? So hopefully I gave you some understanding. And to clear the air about this, you know, foreclosure and foreclosure prevention and all that, you can't prevent a damn foreclosure. I'm telling you that right now. If you owe and you have a legitimate lender in your face, you might as well chalk it up. You better have some strategy to buy you some time to find you another house if you've been in that house 3 or 4 years. You should have enough money saved to either pay a lawyer or be able to learn enough. 2 or 3 years is way long enough for you to be able to learn the things that is taught on the show, for you to be able to put up some offense and defense. Okay? So there's no foreclosure prevention. I don't deal with foreclosure prevention. And for those of you that deal with me, I'd be like, yeah, you're not in foreclosure. I mean, what do you have? Why do you think you have a lender before you? How do you know they're a lender? Well, they said so. Of course they're going to say so. Of course. That's their job, to mislead you, okay? And you'll get in there arguing, well, the mortgage said that they slow to do this and do that, and they'd be like, yeah, well, okay, well, how about we'll do that? Okay, well, we'll do that. If that's all you're complaining about, that the mortgage said, but you're not talking to a mortgagee. I think I've made that quite clear on this show, the difference. So hopefully we're gaining a full understanding of what a debt collector is and what a creditor is. Okay? I'm going to go to call lines. This time I was a little bit more organized in the call line because I actually wrote down the order and sequence by which you called so I can get first people first and second people second. And I'm looking for that piece of paper here to see where I wrote that down. If you have any questions about what I talked about, feel free to call in. The call-in line is 424-222-5250. I've got an hour and 20 minutes left. All right, we're going to go to the first caller, 209-1019. In fact, they're gone. Let's go to 770-9898, 770-9898. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Sharif, greetings, peace. I love you, man.
Peace, peace.
What you just got finished explaining, you explained it very clear and wow. And you just answered the question I was calling you about. I'm the least sophisticated consumer, first of all, but not the slowest.
That's right. That's right.
I got the webinar. I listened to part one, part two, listened to them again. I've been going over the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act. I don't know it by heart, but I've been going over it. The TV's off. I'm studying this. I'm coming up on 90 days in default. But what you just got finished saying, and I know for sure that I'm dealing with a I'm dealing with
a debt collector
because it's all over the paperwork. 30 days, like you said, 30 days in writing, which is not true. Everything shows they're a debt collector.
That's right.
So the question I have now is, if I go ahead and pay them to do some more studying, am I acquiescing and showing that they are a creditor now?
Not necessarily, because the FDCPA and as well as possibly your consumer protection laws allow you to sue a debt collector not only for their behavior, because understand, I want to make this clear again. When you're suing on consumer protection laws, the FDCPA, it can apply to a legitimate creditor, meaning, okay, let's say you got a legitimate mortgagee before you, and they do some things that are in violation of the FDCPA, in violation of the Act. They can do that. So if you pay a debt collector and they misrepresented the amount and character of the debt or misrepresented their capacity, the FDCPA allows you to go and sue them for what you paid them, okay? So if you had an action, you would sue them for violation of certain provisions of the FDCPA. You would sue them because you made a $10,000 payment to them with the understanding that they were some sort of creditor, or upon belief, you felt, based on their communications and their mortgagee, creditor, lender-related language, I thought I was dealing with a creditor. But upon research and belief, I determined that they were not a creditor subject to payment. Okay? So they sent me these forms. So what am I saying, brother? Well, under 1692, let's say 1692 JA, okay, that's furnishing deceptive forms. So they sent you an assignment, or they sent you a notice of default, or a notice to foreclose. You would sue them under 1692 JA because that act prohibits the furnishing of a form if the purpose person furnishing that form, knows that the form would create a false belief in you as a consumer that that form is some sort of illegal form. Okay? So 1692 JA, go look that up. So you would sue them under that, saying they sent me these forms, they sent me these notices, I don't know who they're talking about. And if you want to believe that they were a mortgagee, these documents, not giving any validity or authenticity to that mortgage contract, deed of trust, or deed, you would say, okay, I'm looking at the documents they provided, but even if they were who they said they were, the contract doesn't allow for them to do what they did in the manner they did it. So understand that consumer protection laws are not about the debt. You can have a good debt and a creditor violate the consumer protection law, specifically the FDCPA. It's about the behavior and manner by which they collect the debt. So if you send me a statement and you say I owe $100, but then I do an order and realize I owe $86, and you're a legitimate lender, I can hit you in the head and sue you and be like, that was a misrepresentation of the character and amount of the debt. I got to sue you and get my $1,000 plus any actual damages. Okay? So that's how it goes, brother. Hopefully I'm going a little deeper than your question, but what I would do, let me answer this because I know this is what you probably need. Brother Sharif, if I'm going through even an alleged foreclosure, what do I do? You would hire you an attorney if you're not ready to file suit. This time, pay that attorney his due. Tell that attorney to CC you on everything he files and see how he goes about the case. At the same time, contemporaneously, you're learning. the FDCPA, and you call that attorney somewhere mid in between, you go, hey, why didn't you do this? Or why didn't you do that? Or, you know, they did this. See, attorneys love to work with people that have, they don't, they're intimidated by people that are smarter than them, but they like to work with people that have some foundational information pertaining to their case. It will help them because they want to win, because if you're going to him on an FDCPA, understand his fees he has to get if he's the prevailing party. Okay, so you want to study that, or if you have enough knowledge, you go ahead and file your lawsuit. And one of the tort claims is wrongful foreclosure. Why am I saying wrongful foreclosure? Not because it was a foreclosure, but because you said it was a foreclosure. So I'm going to say you wrongfully tried to foreclose because that's an action you can't take. That's a violation of the FDCPA. Threatening to take an action that you cannot legally take. You're not a mortgagee, so you can't send me a notice of default. You're not a lender. You didn't lend me any money, so you can't send me a notice of default. You can't file a notice of foreclosure. You see where I'm going, brother?
Yeah, I see where you're going because I'm not at the default part. I mean, I'm not at the foreclosure yet, but they're saying all those words you're saying about we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Also, like you said, there was supposed to be $30,000 left in the mortgage. They stuck in another $9,000. And then also, when I went to pull a credit report, I was going to send them the debt validation letter. They didn't pull the credit report either. So how to deal with that with sending the letter, because they never pulled the credit report.
This is strategy. Pull your credit report, get all those notices, conduct your due diligence, check the county recorder, see what's been recorded there, look over your contract. Do you have to read every sentence? Just read the important parts that applies to what you're looking at. The notice.
I have it here. It's
the
security.
Who is supposed to,
it's a security. I'm sorry. It's a security deed right here. They have no, it's PennyMac. PennyMac is not anything. They haven't pulled my credit report, and it's a security deed going back. Okay.
Yeah, they don't have to pull your credit report. That's a separate thing. That's an FCRA. If they're reporting an erroneous debt, then you have a cause of action under FCRA. But let's deal with the debt. You're facing imminent foreclosure, allegedly.
Yeah.
But you and I know from what we discussed that it ain't foreclosure because they can't execute or perform a foreclosure. So you sue them immediately. You don't have to send anything to these jokers. When they send you a deceptive notice, you sue them. But you know what you're doing when you're suing them. And let me tell you how you can go in small claims court and do just what I said to kind of clear the air. What you would say in small claims court is, Judge, I got this notice from these strangers. I don't know who they are. Again, if I write you a check and it's to you and somebody else tries to cash it, the check is good, but it's the wrong person trying to cash it. So I got this notice from them saying they're going to take my property. I don't know who they are. They're not listed on any documents I may or may not have executed. I don't know who they are. I know they're not a lender. I never received any money from them. I don't know what they're talking about. I need you to help determine, buy in through a declaratory judgment or judgment of this court, to determine who they are. Because the instruments that they provided to me, one, are deceptive forms in violation of 1692JA, okay? They're forms that's meant to deceive me, to confuse me, and it did, because I'm a least sophisticated consumer. Now, they say they acquired the debt while I was in default, but that sort of changes the lane for them and put them in a debt collector status who becomes subject to the FDCPA. So, Judge, can a mere debt collector, a third-party debt buyer and debt collector, actually steal real property? I say that, Judge, because pursuant to 1692I, they're trying to take a non-judicial action, because I think you're in a non-judicial state, and they're not allowed
Georgia.
To do that. So I'm confused, Judge. Can you clarify that or de-clarify that for me in the form of declaratory judgment who they are? You understand? Now when you get that, that's the only issue really you want, because how is that issue going to help you, brother? It's going to help you all the way down the line, because you got an order from a judge saying you jokers here are not creditors. Don't be sending me no notices about foreclosure. The judge already said you're a debt collector and you can't send those kind of notices, or the notice was given by a party not authorized to perform under that instrument. You get where I'm going? Real simple.
Yes.
Real simple, brother. That's all you're asking. You don't need $1 million. You don't want $1 million. Your small claims court is for you to have small advantages that puts a halt to the allege foreclosure. Now what are you doing? You're buying your time. Let me tell you another thing, brother, to share with you that everybody needs to know that may help you. First thing you want to do when you're looking at a case like that, you want to look at the statute of limitations. When I was speaking with that attorney the other day, I think one of the reasons why he became very flattered with me is just because I studied this, okay, for years, all right? But there's one thing I said to him that really strategically he was like, man, you got to talk. That's when he said, come to my office. And I was looking at one of the cases, and the first thing I look for is the notices. I look at who it is, and I look at the note, and I look at the mortgage, and I look at the statute of limitations, first thing I think of. So he says, we can go ahead and we can do this, and they might be barred. I said, well, they're barred by the statute of limitations. And he said this to me, this attorney, white-haired attorney. He says, well, statute of limitations in Nevada is, you know, X amount of years. And he said, so they're within the statute of limitations. I said, no, they're not. He says, why do you say that? I said, they're not. He says, I'm looking at it right here. I know Nevada. Statute of limitations is 4 or 5 years. I said, yeah, but this company is from Pennsylvania. That means the default happened by operation of law within their state, and their statute of limitation time limit can be used. In other words, it was 3 years in Pennsylvania and 5 years, I believe, it was in Nevada. And he said, wow. I said, you didn't know that? He said, this was his answer to kind of get around it. I didn't think of it like that. See, that strategy that you guys got to know that, yeah, you might have a statute of limitations in your state, but if you have a company that's issuing a default, the default is issued from their state. So they have to go by their state law where they're formed, okay? Not many people know that. Not many attorneys know that. And there's case law to support that. But anyway, brother, that's what I'm saying. Did I help you with that question?
You helped a lot, and also I need to help you with some asset protection. You have my number, and I want to do a consultation with you. So if you take it down and call me after the show, I know you're really busy, and I will compensate you for your time.
No problem. Just email me, brother, to remind me, okay? You have my email address?
Yes, I'm going to put this number in, the home number, so
okay.
You know it's me. All right,
no
I
problem.
Appreciate
some
it.
Blessings, man. Hopefully I help. All right, brother. All right, let's go to 561-1665. 1665, you're on High Frequency Radio. This is Brother Sharif. Do you have a question?
Yes. I was calling because I know you've mentioned several things that we should read, the Federal Debt Collections Act and the Federal Reporting Act.
The FDCPA, the Fair Debt, because I'm a word connoisseur, sister, so I'm going to make sure you have the right language, because
mm-hmm.
that kind of language
mm-hmm.
will get you laughed at. And I'm not picking on you, but I want
mm-hmm.
you to say the right thing. It's the
mm-hmm.
Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, okay, which
mm-hmm.
is the FDCPA, and then the Fair Credit
mm-hmm.
Reporting Act, which is the FCRA. And then you have the
mm-hmm.
TCPA,
okay.
which is the Telephone Communication Practices Act. And then you have your state consumer protection laws. But go ahead.
Okay, the state.
Whatever your
okay.
state you're in,
because
they will have
I was
a,
just really.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, sir.
I've listened to several of your shows, but I just want to make sure that I've got a complete list of all of the laws that I should take a look at first.
Okay.
I think you had mentioned TILA also, and
I don't really. I mention those things, but you will, if you listen to my last five shows, it is very rare I go into those things because I don't think many of you are dealing with mortgages. So I don't start talking that language unless I have a true creditor. So I might have mentioned it for those that are in a legitimate mortgage arrangement. All right, I might mention
mm-hmm.
those. But those laws are very red herring type laws, and if you send a QWR to a debt collector, again, you are saying, you're my creditor, and I want you to abide by the law that applies to creditors. Why are you telling them that? I mean, if they're not a creditor. So that means you don't know what you're doing. Just like if you go in there and they say, well, we did a foreclosure, and you don't object, say, what foreclosure? You didn't do a foreclosure. You couldn't do a foreclosure because you're not authorized to. So you might want me to think that you did a foreclosure, and the court might allow you to try to project that image, but I know better. You didn't do a foreclosure. Prove it. Prove I had a motor vehicle. Prove I need a license plate on my horse. You see where I'm going? So what was your question more? Am I answering your question, or should you go to court and sue for TILA? I think it's a waste of time. Should you go to court and sue for, you know, 12 U.S.C. 2605 violation QWR? You can, and this is why I would do that strategically. If you're playing the role of a creditor, I'm going to already make my pleadings clear that I know you are not a creditor. But since you wanted to play that game and wear that mask, this is some of the obligations and responsibilities that go along with that. I sent you a notice and saying, now, look, if you are a debt collector, you need to answer pursuant to 15 U.S.C. 1692G. But if you are a creditor, and I will underline that or italicize that, then you need to answer this. It's a trap. It's a trap notice, because if you pick the wrong one and you're not that person, I'm going to slam you for violation of 12 U.S.C. because you can't answer that anyway. You can't answer a qualified written request because you're not a damn creditor. So if you go on and you pick that door, it's a trap. You see what I mean? It's strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you said if you're a creditor, answer this way, and if you're a what was the other? I'm sorry, I didn't catch it. You said better?
If you're a creditor or if you're a debt collector, you need to provide an answer pursuant to 1692G. If you're a creditor, then 12 U.S.C. 2605E applies, which is the RESPA. Okay? So you need to give me a QWR. You will be able to notice, sister, from the communications whether you're dealing with a creditor or a debt collector. I'm telling you right now. If you get some flimsy statements and some flimsy letters that look like a 12-year-old wrote it, and most of these debt collectors' responses to QWRs are just that. They look entirely like a junior high school person wrote it. Okay? Or it looks cut and pasted like some of the people out here suing from somebody else's letter. And you can tell. I can almost look at them. I can say, read me the first paragraph, and I'll tell you what you're dealing with, okay? So if you're receiving that communication and they don't answer it properly, yes, you can go on and smash them for violations of 12 U.S.C. 2605E, the RESPA. You can hit them for TILA. You can hit them for 15 U.S.C. 1641G, which is the fact they didn't notify you when they transferred or assigned a debt. They didn't put the name of the borrower and the beneficiary and a phone number and an address. You know, all those things. You can load them up, because the strategy is I might put 10 causes of action, and I try to make most of them good, meaning that I'll put some little sprinkly dressings around it, some things that the judge, I know, will say no to. But if he says no, too many times, I don't want him getting comfortable saying no too many times. So I want to put some good pleadings in there and a couple of bad ones, so the judge would be like, "Well, I'm not going to give him that. I'm not going to give him that, but I am going to give him this." Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's all strategy. Mm-hmm. You got to sit down and plan what you're trying to, what your end result, what your desired end result.
I get that, but and the reason why I'm asking about all of this is because I'm trying to make a comprehensive list of all of the things that I should go in and actually read up on, and I have those things that you've mentioned, but you know you'd also mentioned PACER, I think, as far as maybe getting a subscription to PACER. Is that similar to like LexisNexis and West Digest?
I mean, yes. You know, I tell some people that study consumer protection law, instead of you downloading somebody and cutting, pasting, and filling in the blanks, you know, somebody else's complaint, you need to look at sample complaints. In a couple of my webinars, I shared some sample complaints as a sample, not a damn template. I don't do templates, and I told y'all that from the first show I ever came on as a guest. I don't believe in templates. Mm-hmm. Learn how to write. We all know how to write. You sound real intelligent. I'm sure you can put together a story and say, this is what happened. This is what it did. Mm-hmm. And it appears to to me that these may be violations of certain provisions in 15 U.S.C. 1692 or 1681, mm-hmm. or you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you ask the court. You don't mm-hmm. say that's a violation. You never do that. The court's going to look at you like, okay, sounds like you got it all figured out. You don't need us. This appears to be a violation of X, Y, and Z. And let me answer your question about PACE. PACE is a court registry system that mm-hmm. keeps a track of all federal cases. You can pull up anybody's federal mm-hmm. case in PACER, bankruptcy case mm-hmm. in PACER, any criminal mm-hmm. cases federally in PACER. It doesn't do any state court mm-hmm. cases. Okay, so if you're interested in learning, some people go on PACER and just look at some complaints, or they may see a complaint or a ruling that came out of the court, and they want to go and really read the entire case and look at the complaint, see how it was pled. If you want to know how to plead, look at some cases that was lost and look at some that were won, and notice how you need to plead and how you need to write instead of depending on somebody else's template. So that's why I said PACER. So go ahead, sister.
Okay, because I want to get the most efficient way that I could look up these cases without, because I'm not a lawyer and I'm not planning on being a lawyer.
Sure.
So I'd like to look it up the cheapest and most efficient way that I can. That's why I was asking you for
brought me back to
but I'm
something.
Not even really planning on.
Right.
I'm not
you
even
brought me back
really
to a question that I wanted.
Law.
That's right, and that's a good
really
point.
Planning on
you
putting
don't
case
need
law
to
in anything that I write.
Yeah, you don't need case law, and that's,
I mean?
And that's a good position to take. You don't need case law. You don't need to make it that complex. If you see some of the complaints that are out there, and I have some students and people that I've dealt with and had groups that I taught, it is very, when you look at these complaints and these people are making six figures, okay, and I know people that are making six figures just doing consumer protection laws. Okay, they're making six figures, and the complaints is really simple. On this particular day, they did X, Y, and Z. That appears to be a violation of six. On this particular day, they obtained my consumer credit file without a permissible purpose. It's really simple. No case, no fancy-wancy, no legalese. Really simple. So I want to bring you to a couple other things I meant to mention to you that will help you. For those of you that really want to get serious about learning civil practice, rules of procedure, consumer protection laws, there's two books that I recommend. And the first, both of them are O'Connor's, O, comma, C-O-N-N-E-R-S. And he has a whole collection of books, all right? The ones that I would suggest that you get, and those of you out there that really want to take it serious and have this information to use for the rest of your life, this is not a fad. This is not like Jordache jeans. It's not going to come and go. The consumer protection laws are going to be here. They're even going to get stronger. So it's something you need to know because you're having intercourse every day with debt collectors and creditors. So it's something, information that you need to know. It's not some willy-nilly stuff that's good today and gone tomorrow. So O'Connor's Civil Trial Practice, okay, he has all years. You can go back as far as 2011. I would stay somewhere around 2012 or 2013, all right? And O'Connor's Civil Forms. He has a book that has over 500 civil forms, motion practice forms, discovery practice forms, motion to dismiss, how to ask for discovery, how to do just about anything. They're going to be books, not just webinars, not just, you know, you calling in to some show. I don't care if it's my show. They're going to be books and required reading that you need to take up on your own. Those are two books that will get you pretty well started in understanding how to litigate your case, along with my shows and webinars and questions that are answered for other people. That's a good fundamental understanding of the consumer protection laws, with you reading, of course, the FDCPA, FCRA, TCPA in your consumer protection laws. These are things that is going to help you, sister, down the road in life, or help some people of your family or some friends that you know that are in these situations. You're like, oh, yeah. I mean, I know what to do. I could take you down there in small claims court. I could take you in district court because I know what to do. This knowledge is valuable. It can save you money or make you money. You understand?
Well, and I also noticed, that in the local rules, my state local rule, civil rules, is that they actually have the forms in the writs and the complaints and the pleadings in the rules as well.
Yes.
Indeed. So
you can find any form you want. You're thinking that you need to, you know, they have, the district court has what you call a pro se packet. So if you're going to get serious about suing in federal court, you need to get you a booklet on the the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, your local rules, okay? If you're bringing state tort claims, you need to know your local rules. If you're just going in the district court and you're filing federal claims, you need to know the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Okay, but do you have any state claims like a wrongful foreclosure? Yes, United States District Court.
Is that the United States District Court? Okay, United States District Court.
No, and I know the difference.
Not the District Court of... Okay.
United States District Court, yes. Not district courts of the United States. That's a different type court, but I won't get into that. So, yes, so you need to learn that. And get those O'Connor books, and if you apply yourself, I would say 3 to 6 months, you will have knowledge that will carry you 20 or 30 years and save a bunch of money in your pocket, get rid of a bunch of debt, or turn some debt into an asset in the form of some money pursuant to an order or judgment you may be able to get against a debt collector. So this is not Johnny-come-late fad information. This is education that everybody needs to know, because you're having intercourse on a daily, weekly, or monthly, or annual basis with debt collectors and creditors. So you need to know them. You need to know how to keep them in line. You need to know what that judge is supposed to do, what he's not supposed to do, what he can do and what he can't do. Mm-hmm. What the debt collector, you got to learn the rules of evidence. That's another area you have to learn. Okay, so it's no Johnny come late, fly by night type thing. It takes application and it takes dedication. And there's certain people that, since I've been on this call, that's been at every webinar and is really taking it seriously, and they're making headways. They're getting rid of foreclosures. They're getting cases dismissed. I got people that's already getting checks in the mail. So I mean, this is real. Like I don't push no propaganda. This is real. This is what I do and I know. Okay, so, you know, hopefully that answered your question, sister, but you could always email me if you need further.
Okay, because I'm just trying to get a comprehensive list almost of, like, everything that I could kind of do in order to be professional as far as how I put together my whatever it is.
I just gave it to you.
If
you get the O'Connor civil forms, he has every form you need in there.
Okay,
and let
great.
Me tell you something.
Okay.
Please don't think these attorneys are so brilliant. They're smart. They're intelligent individuals. I'm not against attorneys. I want to make that clear. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is they have forms. They have templates. They're called boilerplate pleadings. Okay? And they use the same form over and over again. It's nothing fancy. Mm-hmm. These are forms. They get it out of O'Connor's book. Many of them use it. That's who uses these books. So a judge should be able to look at your pleadings and not tell the difference between yours and an attorney's. And this book will help you look professional, which is a big, big, big part of litigation, is that you look and sound the part. So you got enough, sister. I just gave you enough that'll keep you busy as far as educating yourself.
Okay. I just wanted to ask one other question.
Sure.
Is there one other title that's important to out of the USC or any of the other codes that would be important reading? Because I've written down all of the USC, like 15 USC and 26 USC.
15 USC 1692, 15 USC 1681, ETAL. Okay, that's your FCRA, FDCPA. And your TCPA, the Telephone Communication Protection Act. You read those and your state consumer laws, which will be a mini version sometimes. Sometimes it'll duplicate entirely the federal code. Sometimes it won't. It'll be totally different. Sometimes it won't have any teeth. Sometimes it'll be absolutely nothing. If you're in creditor-friendly states like Nevada and Wyoming, you know, they really don't give a consumer a chance, okay? It don't matter. They're creditor-friendly because they know at the end of the day, like the attorney said, the creditors and the banks and the companies are going to take care of the state, not the people. So they have to give them some cushion, all right? So I got to go on to the next question, but I really appreciate your call.
Okay.
Hopefully that helps. All right? Thank you. All right, let's go on to 412-1568. 412-1568. Do you have a question?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you, brother.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to make sure. How you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, man. You know what? Listening to you, you know, you sound, you know, I guess it'll make you smile, but you sound so intelligent and you articulate so well, you know. I even give my grandkids, like, webinars so, you know, they can just hear how brother, you know, is supposed to articulate. You do a very good job at it. And like I said, I really like listening to you.
I appreciate it, brother. And let me say that. I really appreciate that because my goal, I talk to my significant others a lot of time, and my goal is I don't ever want to be so heavenly minded or highly articulate to where I'm earthly no good so people don't understand me. So I try to keep things on a minimum so people can understand, and I try to keep it simple. Hopefully I'm doing a good job from your compliment. I'll go ahead and take a slight pat on the back, but until everybody gets it, I'm not happy.
Well, basically what I'm saying is, you know, a lot of our kids look at rappers and athletes and drug dealers, you know, as being cool. So I see you as a role model, as an intellectual role model, because athletics is going to wear out after time, selling drugs, whatever else is, you know, good at the time for our kids to look up to and aspire to be. That's only temporarily. But intellectual, like you were saying about this here European attorney, he was 70, but he had his intellect. So you're definitely
That's right.
a role model. You're definitely,
you definitely
a role
brother.
Model.
Definitely. And he is, too. Let me tell you something. I learned a lot from the white-haired man, and I knew I would because I asked those tough questions. I'm not afraid. I'm going to ask those tough questions. So he taught me some things, and, you know, I'm going to go and visit with the brother because he wants me to come by. He damn near was offering me a damn job. Okay, I don't need his job, but he liked the way I knew about what I was talking about, and the client understood it. I said, hire him because, you know what, he's telling you the truth. He's telling you, you're not going to walk out of there without a mortgage. I mean, and because he's that honest, and he said to the lady, he said, if you're looking for me to give you a song and a dance and feed you a bunch of bullshit, I'm not going to do it. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth. You're not going to walk out of here without a mortgage. And I said, she said, well, that's everything you preach against, Sharif. And I'm just like, no, I tell people that. If you have a legitimate foreclosure, there ain't nothing that can save you.
That's right.
Nothing that can save you.
Let me ask you this here, because it was a couple things. I tried to be as brief as possible. And you were saying in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, I believe it's 16, I think it's 1692I, where mm-hmm. the debt collectors, they do not have the authority to, you know, take your property. What is that, 28 UFC? 1333. Were you familiar with that also?
What does that apply to?
It applies to MREM property, that these lower state courts don't have jurisdiction either to take an MREM property also. So that again is 28 UFC 1333 when it deals with MREM property and these lower state courts.
Right, based on admiralty, maritime, and prize cases. Okay, so
go ahead.
So the district court shall have, just what it says, the district court shall have original jurisdiction inclusive of all of the courts of the state of any civil case of admiralty or maritime. So you're dealing with MRM actions, okay? Admiralty or maritime jurisdiction saving to suitors in all cases all other remedies to which they are otherwise entitled, any prize brought into the United States, and all proceedings for the condemnation of property taken as prize. So that necessarily would not apply to foreclosure.
Okay.
Okay, because a district court can't hear a foreclosure at all. Okay, they will refer you to the state because foreclosure is more so than not come up applicable under state law. Okay.
Okay,
so you're going in district court on a federal question.
Okay, all right, that's fine. Now, what I wanted to ask you also, when you're talking about these mortgages, these assignments, now, again, it's saying somewhere on the Fannie Mae website that the beneficiary is the only person to do assignments to these here mortgages, and they're basically saying that You know, you don't have a mortgage unless the beneficiary is on that mortgage. Did you have any information on that?
Anything that comes from, you got to understand where disinformation comes from. And it comes from, there's a lot of disinformation out there by many people, okay? But it comes from law groups. Please understand these banks have marketing people that go around the sites and put out disinformation. Okay, that's how they did MERS. That's how MERS blew up to be what it was, because they're trying to move MERS into being what it never can be. Okay, so when dealing with Fannie Mae, I wouldn't listen to anything Fannie Mae say. I see Fannie Mae when I was in court. One of the six cases that I sat with this Obama task force, some of those were Fannie Mae doing eviction. I'm like, when the hell did Fannie Mae, a subsidiary of government, be allowed to own property? How did they? I can look at that. As soon as you tell me the word Fannie Mae, I don't have to look at a piece of paper. I'm telling you, you don't have a creditor. They're not a creditor. And if they're, and Fannie Mae is involved in any one of you guys' foreclosure, your loan 9.5 times out of 10 was sold into the secondary market via securitization, meaning it's in a remedy. And that's how Fannie Mae got involved, because understand these banks were screwing the government as well. So the government was just like, okay, y'all going to have to go and clean that up, okay? So they gave all this fiasco, they gave it to the boss, so y'all can go out there and make all these attorney fees, do these foreclosures and everything, and the government is going to be against you trying, which is why I said this task force that I met with, they're really not really doing anything, because the administration is not really doing anything. It just looks good. It's wall dressing, okay? So I don't believe anything from Fannie Mae, brother. And if you're dealing with anything from Fannie Mae, you can go on their site and be like, Fannie Mae going to lie to your ass, all right? Okay? Because they just don't want anybody else stealing from them. But they're going to lie to you, I'm telling you right now. So I don't believe anything but what I know for myself. Looking at my documents, doing an auditing of the county records and the communications that I've received from these alleged debt collectors, I will look over that, my brother, and make your own determination whether there's something not right in the source. And it'll be easy to detect. And the information I provided on this show provides that ruler for you to be able to measure what's fact and what's fiction.
And, you know, what you said was 100% correct. And you were saying something about, you know, getting an attorney. But I had some questions, and I did go to a couple attorneys. And it was, like, really funny. Like, you know, I was basically explaining some of the stuff that I had learned, you know, from yourself. And it was quite vaguely, but this was a guy who, you know, he says he does, you know, foreclosure litigation. And my thing is, when I usually, you know, meet these attorneys, I always ask them, what is, you know, what is going to be your defense? And I don't know, it seems like that's a very hard question, because they each case is different. They get to rumbling and rambling about, you know, and so I asked the guy, you know, I did a debt validation letter, and he asked me, he said, what is that exactly? This was an attorney. He asked me, what was a debt validation?
I know you're serious. I mean, I know you're serious. But these attorneys will take your money. They don't care. They look. Yeah. They like strippers. You won't give them a tip. They gonna dance for you. They might. Now, a 70-year-old man, he might not have a good dance, but he's got enough experience to be able to hit some moves without doing a split that may be able to afford you some time. You know, or to maybe lay something down on the record that you can put your feet on. He might show you something. He's going to show you something. That stripper is going to demonstrate something to you for you to say, oh, I like that. You know what I mean? And go in your pocket.
Right.
So, you know, some of them do know what they're doing. Okay, as long as you know what it is they're supposed to do. But if you don't know, like most of the conversation I had at that table, only me and the attorney really knew what we were talking about or what he was saying. The rest of them didn't have a clue. And I'm just like, you need to go ahead and get you an attorney, because you have no clue. Until you learn what he is supposed to do, then I correct him on a couple of things. We talked about bankruptcy. I knew he didn't know about bankruptcy. I said, well, what about a bankruptcy counsel? He says, well, you know, bankruptcy wouldn't be because this and that. I said, yeah, but how many bankruptcies? My next question was, I didn't praise him. I didn't elevate him. I said, counsel, how many bankruptcies do you do? I really don't do them at all. Okay, then I know that's why you said that bullshit answer. Because you don't know what you're doing. You see what I mean? But the client would have been like, okay, well, immediately when she said that, although I talked to her about bankruptcy and the pros and the cons, when the attorney said it, she said, okay, I won't do bankruptcy. So I was just like, go ahead and hire your attorney because that's who you believe in because they're believable. But they can shoot you a crock of shit too, all right? And that's just how it is. I'm sorry to say it that way.
Here's what I'm going to do is I got a letter downloaded from MERS to all its members. I want to email you that. I don't know if you have it or not, but it's a letter basically saying that, telling all its members to not to use their name in any foreclosure.
Exactly. Sure.
And
exactly.
And also any foreclosure that's coming up, remove their name, and they need permission prior to using MERS name. And this was in 2011.
Sure.
Were you familiar with that letter?
Absolutely. Are you also aware that MERS doesn't exist anymore? MERS Corp does. See, these are things we need to know. MERS Corp exists.
It's 95, right?
That's right. See,
okay,
honest to you, brother, you studying. I love that. You studying, so you know that. So when you see these kind of things done, you're just like, that MERS assignment, how can a dead entity issue some sort of assignment? And they don't even exist anymore. MERS done changed names, I believe, 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 times, okay? Because they're being sued so much that they went on and canceled that out. But you still see MERS assignments coming up lately. But there's some that's already been in the system out there. There's millions of them already done, and they can't correct them. So you should be able to use it to say, okay, that's the only document you're relying upon for standing, right? So do you got to talk about all this other, you know, disco lights? No, let's just talk about the one thing that you're using to give you, that you allege gives you standing to be here, and that's the assignment. And spend time on that and turn that assignment into a big black belt and whip they tail with it. You going to tell me this assignment represents $200,000 in property, sir? Are you crazy? Are you an idiot? You see what I mean?
There was one more question. I'll go out there. One more question I said to this attorney also, right? And I said about 4 or 5 of them. Before I hire him, if it appears that from what I learned on the show that I'm more competent in the questions that I'm asking, I'm like you know, I tell his brother, I tell him, pump your brakes for a minute. But I hit him with a hard question. I said, pump your brakes. They're in the wrong lane, right? And I said, they're debt collectors. And I said, another thing, I said, none of these complaints, I don't care if it's foreclosure or criminal, none of these complaints are verified with somebody that has firsthand knowledge of something that happened 15 years ago. Unless they're going to change the case law and the code of civil procedure and the rules of evidence, none of these complaints are verified. Not none of them. And it's like, I got much love for you,
because I can tell you studied, man. That's beautiful. I love when people can talk about these cases. Not only are you talking about it, but I can tell that you've been learning it long enough for it not to personally affect you to the point where you can laugh about it. And that's when you're really in a good place, and you can go to court and be like, and you can look at that attorney looking all pretty fancy and talk to them and be like, man, what is this? Come on, man, what is this? And you can laugh at him, be like, man, what is this? Come on, are you really want to go through with this case, man, and come in court with me with this kind of document, man? Or with this, how are you going? Well, I can get the evidence. So you may get the evidence may be allowed to be in, but it doesn't prove you have any interest or suffered any financial injury. So you can put all that evidence. The judge can be like, I'm going to accept that evidence. Okay, great. It didn't prove anything, though. You know, and like you said, these complaints don't prove anything. Just like some of the complaints people have sent me, say, hey, I did this. Take a look at it and tell me what it looks like. I said, it just looks like a bunch of garbage.
You said, you know, the FDCPA says this, and the FCRA said,
okay, you said what it said, but you didn't say how they injured you or where they violated those provisions, you know?
Yeah, that's correct. Well, like I said, I just wanted to share that with you. And again,
good brother.
all the stuff, like I said, I've learned it from you, Yusuf, and the other guests that come on there. And you really, really, as a novice, you know, you really think these attorneys are really smart and they're the elite of the educated individuals in the country, and that's just not true. They know procedures a lot. They don't know the law. A lot of times they really don't, they're not good at procedures. And I'm going to these people for advice. I'm like, and they don't know what I'm talking about. And I'm starting to think, well, wait a minute. Maybe these guys on the other side, I really think I can, you know, you've been bullied for so long and you start lifting weights for a couple years and you wrestle with a guy. You said, you know what? I can really beat this dude up if I choose to. And that's basically, you know, where I'm at now. But I'm going to study some more, and I'll get my paperwork and stuff out where, you know, I got a program that I buy where it shows you how to write the paperwork, the caption, the preamble, and how to do the wherefore clause at the bottom, and how to do your counts, your complaints, your cause of action, how to number them. So I'm just about ready. Not quite there, but I'm getting ready to get out there in the field and put in some work.
Good, brother. Keep it up, man. Love you. Keep doing what you're doing. Honors to you for taking the ability to study, man, and apply yourself. And I definitely appreciate that. I'm going to move on. Email me if you need me, man, but thank you.
All right, cool.
All right, peace. All right, I'm going to be running out of power here. And the charger to my computer was left in another vehicle of mine. So I got 14 minutes. I'm going to try to run through. There's 32 minutes left in the stream, but I may get cut off. I'm going to be honest with y'all. So let me go through. And let's go to 317-1342, 317-1342. Do you have a question, comment, or concern?
I do. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, brother.
All right. Yeah, I'm all excited about this. I got a letter in front of me. It's a case that's gone 2 years now in this foreclosure. When this foreclosure is supposed to be foreclosure. And it fits all the criteria which you're talking about by them being a debt collector. And the thing is, they have transferred this to three law firms. And the last law firm here is right here locally in Indiana. And there's a certain thing here that I'm tripping over, Brother Sharif. It's talking about the Bank of New York, and then it says FKA, the Bank of New York, as a successor and an interest to J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, National Association as trustee for CBAS Mortgage Loan Asset Backed Certificate Series 2002 CB3 and various collection foreclosure and bankruptcy litigation. It is our intention to foreclose our clients' mortgage on your real property in REM. This means we will not take a money judgment against you, but we'll foreclose your rights in the real property. If you have any questions, please contact our bankruptcy attorney. The other part is it's making me laugh because they're saying they are a debt collector. They got it all through here and whatnot, but they want us to respond to this letter in 30 days, which hasn't been sent through a court whatsoever. So I've been through this with a couple other law firms, but this particular letter, for some reason, it just makes me, it just trips me out because they can't get past what I put in on them on a writ of discovery and that they can't answer that writ of discovery. And what I'm noticing, they keep transferring it to a different, they're going to law firm. Now, I'm not the smartest at this, but I'm going to ask your opinion on why they keep doing that, because if one set of lawyers can't deal with it, then they send it to another one and send it to another one. So what's your take on that?
What's my take? Well, I don't have a crystal ball, but I can say that I can say that if they keep transferring it, they might have some issues with it. You might have sent them something that scared them, okay?
Yeah.
Or you might have sent something that they just don't want to deal with. It's just like when you see debt collectors, they will most times transfer a debt and circulate the debt many, many times.
okay? If,
right.
If you issue a challenge, like I'll send a letter and they'll sometimes circulate, it'll go in circulation, and then they'll go in ahead and they'll transfer it to someone else because they don't want any part of it. Or maybe they had too many lawsuits already, or maybe, you know, the judge been on their ass about what they're doing. So I don't know. But if they're transferred from firm to firm, they're going to do that. But see, if you were me, I love when they do that because once I beat one debt collector up and get some money out of them, I really don't. I want them to regurgitate the debt. I want them to circulate it because I want to get another opportunity to do the same thing I did to the previous one. You see, like, I look at things different. Like, people are like, just get rid of them. I mean, please. I don't want to deal with them. I'm like, yo, send them over here to me, man, because I know I can get some intercourse going with them, okay? And I know I can get some money out of them. So I don't make them go away. Don't scare them too much, man. Bait them. Bait them in. You don't scare fish when you fishing, man. My daddy used to take me out fishing. He'd be like, boy, sit down, be still, boy. Be still, man. You're scaring the fish. Don't jerk that rod too quick. Man, don't be jerking the rod, man. Just, you know, be easy. You know, be easy.
Right.
So, you know, okay. So that's just strategy, brother. Just keep doing what you're doing. Sometimes they're gonna go away. Sometimes they're not. You know?
Right.
You know, that's just the bottom of it. So
right.
that's how it works. So, you know, you have any other questions? And I'm going to need you to stay on the line because my computer just went down because I told you the power's going out. And I'm trying to do an alternative source here to get back on so I really can't see my talk board. And Yusef, if you're on the call, if you happen to be here, if you would log into the chat and take over the call line, I'd appreciate it until I can get back in. But anyway, brother, go ahead.
Okay, now I just want this. You said so many different abbreviations for different things that we need to research on. What I'm gonna do is just send my email to you, and a request for that information again on those different consumer agencies and stuff that you got because I couldn't write them all down quick. But that's it. That's basically it.
Say that one more time, brother.
I said that. You said so many different consumer agencies that we can look into and study. I couldn't write them all down, so what I was going to do is just send an email to you asking you for those again.
Consumer Protection Law, 15 U.S.C., 1692, which is the FDCPA, Fair Debt Collection Practices Act.
Okay.
15 U.S.C. 1681, which is the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which has to do with your credit reports. Okay?
Okay.
If you start there, then you can get into the TCPA, and you also want to study your state consumer protection laws, which could be named and styled differently. It could be unfair, deceptive practices. It could mimic the FDCPA. You know what I mean? A lot of times your state actions will give you, you know, probably the same money as you, or sometimes less than the federal action. So, you have, again, it's strategy on which court you want to go in. You know, if you're in somewhere like Washington, RCW, I mean, you got some killer consumer protection laws, and you might not even want to deal with the FDCPA because in RCW in Washington, you have some $5,000, $10,000 violations. That's similar to what a 1,000 violation would be in the FDCPA. So, you know, the FDCPA would be a tip. You know, that would be tithes and offerings compared to what the local law, the state law would allow you to have.
Right.
So, you know, it's all strategy. You got to sit down and decide where you want to go, why you want to go there, and what you're going to do when you get there. But if you start there, brother, you should have a good understanding.
Yeah. Okay, because I'm in the state of Indiana, and they tripping down here big time. They just do what they want to do.
Right. You would look up your Indiana consumer protection laws.
Yeah, I got them. Okay. I appreciate that.
No problem. You got any more questions? Because, I'm still trying to fumble around to try to get logged back in, so keep talking because I really can't do anything on the board.
Okay. Okay. Well, small claim court strategy here, the Supreme Court has got them under scrutiny right now. Because they say the small claim courts in the state of Indiana are criminal. And they really are on them or behind it, but the people still don't know what that means. And when you try to explain it to them, they're looking at you like you crazy cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And They're actually for, let me see, what is it? My friend went to a clinic, got himself taken care of. He had insurance, but the hospital took and sued him for the charges. But the attorneys never took and sent him a thing about him having to pay for those charges, so they took in, what is it, garnished his wages unjustly. So I took and I got that really stopped, but at the same time, he couldn't understand what I was telling him when I said they should have sued him because they never gave him, you know, the chance to explain his case. So he just thanked me for the fact that they stopped the garnishments, and he just moved on. He just went back to Texas. What I don't understand about our people is that when you find out that they done did you wrong, and I hate to say this, but they act like they say, thank you, Jesus, or they'll say, thank you, Allah, I'm through with this mess, and move on. And they're not understanding they're supposed to come back and get compensated for the wrong that they did them. But when the criminal court systems move against you and extract fees from you and take everything you got, you feel like in your heart they're supposed to do it because they're the people of authority and they in power, though you know they're wrong. But when, like you said, that fishing thing, when you got that fish in your hand, you ain't supposed to throw it back in the daggone sea. You're supposed to eat that fish. So when you win that case and you talking about thank you, Jesus, and move on, you don't go back and get the compensation that you're supposed to get for your damages, the damage against you. And that's a problem in our community. They don't understand the act of law of suing. They don't. They just want to get rid of the case. They want to get rid of the police. They don't want to go to court. They don't want to talk to the judge. They want somebody to do it for them, and that's not the proper procedure. You got to stand up sooner or later and fight for yourself, and our people just don't want to do it. They are afraid of court.
You're right,
and
brother.
That's what's happening here.
You're absolutely right, and I agree with that. That's why I tell people, look, I try to show you enough for you to get the fear out of going to court. Go to court, and when you learn the rules, brother, you will not be afraid of court or anything these jokers can do. Okay?
Yeah,
go to court.
I remember I went to court when in my young age, in my 20s. The judge said one word. I was already scared to death, but he said something about omnibus. And it just like when every time he said that, man, it seemed like something in my side of me just said, man, they get ready to bank your ass. Excuse my language, they get ready. and then to come to find out, it wasn't nothing like that. From what I understand, it's something that some things that they have to do for the case, dealing with, you know, the attorneys, this, that, and the other and whatnot.
Right.
But the
it's appropriate, brother. It's appropriate, okay? And it's not an opposite for you to ask a judge, can you define what that means, please? Because
right.
I do understand that there is dual language occurring in this venue. So I do understand sometimes you may slide into a legalese, okay, defined word, and then you might slide right back into the word used in its common terms. I want to know when you DJing that. You understand what I mean?
Right.
So sometimes I might ask you questions. Excuse me, Judge. Sometimes I ask questions that appear to be stupid, okay? But it's not, because I know that sometimes he and shall mean something different than the way I would use it, because I'm in a legal venue that has a different language, and that language is legalese, okay?
Right.
So ask those questions. I just want to be sure that, you know, that you're using the word in this definition. All right, brother? All right, I'm back on the board. I appreciate your question, brother. I'm going to go try to get a few more. All right. Thank you for calling. Be blessed. All right. I'm back on the board. I got my iPad working. Compromise strategy. All right, let's go to 281-4820. 281-4820. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question? That is you.
Okay. Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question specifically dealing with a foreclosure or possibly assumed foreclosure. I'm not in the home anymore, but I was listening to you speaking this morning, and you were saying that if my deed says one company and they actually default with another name, then it wasn't an actual foreclosure. So since I'm not in the home, my question is, can I go back and pursue if you yourself were saying that I think it was Action 1692? So I understand the lingo. Can I file a motion against the entity that wasn't on my deed?
Queen, you can sue anybody as long as you do your research and your studying, you have competent counsel available, or you have overwhelming understanding of why you're suing. Yes, the courts are open to wrongful foreclosure cases. That is a state tort claim. Okay, that's not something you will find in the federal rules, okay, or a federal claim, all right? But you can sue under your consumer protection laws and wrongful foreclosure, and if they took your property, you're entitled to actual damages, meaning if they took your $200,000 property, $200,000 is your actual damages that you sustain as a result of the defendant's actions. So if you lost your $50,000 job because they're reporting something erroneously on your credit, and you can show the court that I applied for this job and they turned me down because these two idiot debt collectors are reporting this erroneous debt, then your actual damage is that $50,000 job times how long I might have had that job. You follow what I mean?
Exactly.
Right. On top of emotional, intentional infliction of emotional distress, you got to pile it on. You got to say, my husband, I just didn't like him. I didn't want to look at him because we had lost our house. It meant everything to us. It had sentimental value. It had actual value.
Right.
I mean, that's where my kids were raised. I mean, I didn't like my husband because he was defenseless, he was helpless, or because I couldn't do anything. You see what I mean? Emotional damage, stress, embarrassment, defamation.
Very true,
it is true. Now, I'm not joking when I say this. I'm being dead serious. So these are claims that you can put on, and you would have a jury or a judge to be able, well, you know, look, I would be stressed if I lost my house. Yeah, I probably wouldn't like my husband or wouldn't want to touch him or no affection or, you know what I mean? It's real. So I laugh about it, but it's real, and nobody can deny you how you felt, your emotions, especially a woman. Nobody can deny those,
right?
How you felt, okay? And women have it easier explaining emotional distress than men, so y'all, you have an advantage there, sister. Use it.
I mean, but this company, they really are doing some aggressive predatory.
All of them are. Yes.
It's bad. Yeah.
What do
but
you
thank
have?
Thank you so much for the knowledge.
You're welcome.
You're
welcome,
again,
sister.
Sir?
Good luck. I said,
no,
what do you have? You're going after a wrongful foreclosure, right? How long was the foreclosure ago? Or the alleged foreclosure?
It was finaled in September of 2013, so I just kind of walked away. I had appealed it, and I actually made it to.
Now, understand, under the FDCPA, okay, you have statutory limit of 1 year. That means you can bring that action within 1 year of when the violation occurred. On the FCRA, you have 2 years. Okay, so that means
credit,
they're reporting something erroneously in your credit report. You have 2 years from the time you notice it to bring that action. FDCPA, you have 1 year. Wrongful foreclosure, there is no statute of limitations. You can bring that whenever you want to bring it.
Okay.
All right, sister?
That's good to know. Thank you so much. I'm going to tune in
every day. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate your commitment.
Bye. Thank you.
All right. All right, we got two more callers here. Seems like I'm going to get to them. 818 out in California, I believe. 818. Let's see if I can get you up. 285. No, I'm sorry. I went to 404 Georgia, 2854. You're on High Frequency Radio. Brother Sharif, can I help you?
Brother Sharif, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Fine, thanks. We have a little delay defect. I know we are short on time, but I have several issues that I wanted to ask some fellow about. May I ask you them?
Right. Yes, go ahead. Let's try to get to a couple of them. I'm going to have to reduce you to a couple.
Okay, very good. On the email, do we have to have a Facebook account? Because I don't do Facebook, Sharif.
I don't either, brother. No, you don't have to have Facebook. I think you can log in, and you're not talking to the most technically savvy when it comes to Facebook and all that. I learned those things. So I think you can log in. I think I heard my co-host say you can log in through Facebook or you can log in through Skype or you can just, if you have some dialing program on your computer, you can dial in the number and listen from your computer.
Okay. And could you and Brother Yusuf address the term limits for all government elected positions, stopping the outsourcing of work of American jobs to foreign nations, and imposing ultra-high tariffs on all imported goods aside from foodstuffs, Brother Sharif and Brother Yusuf? Also, I was wondering if you could do a book or an advisory or a pamphlet on what all Moors, brown people, colored people should know by the time they're 18. Never too late, but by the time they're 18. Just some basics that we all should know.
Sure.
Also, on that, right. I was wondering, how do we best identify agents, counter sellouts, what have you, so we can start clarifying issues? Because in this Moorish Moor agenda, it's rather confusing to some of us, maybe just me, because sometimes there's a sense of counter-agency in there where there's a redundancy. Another issue is, I'm trying to be quick, well, what about the connecting with African nations? What's your opinion on the leadership there, the potentials there, and all of that? And how would a black nation in this nation exist, or black communities, not forgetting Wall Street, or Black Wall Street? I hope I was quick, and I hope I was succinct. My name is Brother Carr.
Okay, you're very articulate. I can appreciate your question. It has a lot of value. However, my show doesn't deal merely with puritanical issues and societal issues, economic issues. Yes, it may be a part of it, but I think that is rather a excellent question for you to ask Brother Yusuf. Look, Yusuf is not on my show. He probably listens, but, you know, sometimes he may chime in. But I think if you call in tomorrow, I think the co-host, Brother Savage, or Brother Yusuf would have some better answers to those questions than I may be able to give you. I will give you my opinion. It may not count for anything, but you make some interesting arguments and questions. And listen, there are questions that I'm interested in, so I would hope that you would call tomorrow and ask those questions so I can bear witness to the answer, okay? They're very good questions. I just don't cover those type questions here, and I try to stay in my lane. I'm not astute when it comes to those issues, but I can definitely, I had a conversation this week about some of those same issues, and when it comes to those issues, you know, I can only speak my opinion, not something you can really place your feet on and not wobble a little bit, all right?
Excellent. Brother Sharif, I forgot to mention, forgive me. Wow, well done. This is awesome. What you're doing is phenomenal. I hope you got bodyguards. I'm just joking. What you're doing is off the chain. Also, Brother Sharif, I noticed that you sent a letter or a question to Mark Stevens, who does court, you know, basic traffic issues. Did you ever get a response from him? I'd like to see how you guys would talk over the jurisdiction issue and his technique in countering the courts. The court system.
No, you must have me confused. I never talked to Mark Stevens. I don't really deal with traffic-related issues. So that wasn't me. That was someone else. That might have been Yusuf or someone else, or maybe Paul Savage. All right? So just call in tomorrow, and they may be able to answer that. I appreciate your question.
Peace, brother. All right,
peace, brother. All right, let's go to last caller, 818, California, yay, 0207, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Hello, Brother Sharif.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I can sure hear you.
Oh, okay, good. Well, thank you for taking my call. I purchased your two seminars recently, and I just want to say before I go any further that the December 14th seminar is excellent for people that are new to this, because I've been studying for 3 years, and I learned more on your seminar than I had heard in 3 years. So thank you for that.
Well, brother, thank you. We appreciate that.
So I have two questions that are simple, and I think you can answer quickly. So the first one is I have a credit card with Citibank, and I refused to allow them to raise the interest rate up, so they said that they would let me have the credit card for one more year at the lower rate, and then they just turned it off, which was okay. And then after listening to your show, I've been paying it off. They raised the rate to 20%, but on the agreement, my agreement was with Citibank, and now it says to make my checks out to somebody called Citi Cards. And I can't find anything on City Cards, and I'm wondering if you're familiar with whether or not City Cards is a debt collector.
So you have a credit card that is current. It's not in default. Is that what
no,
you're saying?
No, it's not in default, but they turned it off. I can't use it anymore. And,
they turned it off, and they want to raise your interest rate, and unless you agree with that, then they're going to suspend your charging privileges until you do agree, right?
No, they already did that like a year ago.
They already did that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I went to the Secretary of States of Iowa, Ohio, and California, and I can't find any listing for a company
this
called
particular.
City Cards.
You know, I've run into that, brother. I've helped people get a few cases dismissed because you will have this. Names count, right? The name of the company that's suing you. I had a person that contacted me and did a consultation with me, and they said, well, this Discover Bank is suing me. I said, well, what did your agreement say? It says a Discover Card, and then an address for Discover Card. I said, well, Discover Card and Discover Bank are two separate entities.
Right.
Okay. If you had a card with Discover Card, then Discover Bank can't sue you unless Discover Bank offered you the credit card. See, these are the games that they'll play. So I'm glad you are really paying attention to the names. But it's a lot of times also that these companies, credit card companies, have subsidiaries. Like your card may be called Discover Card, but it's offered by Discover Bank. If that is the case, then you can make your payments to their subsidiary, or they may have a holding company that handles nothing but payments. So that's not uncommon. You know, if you have a current credit card and you're not in default and they want you to make, you know, a lot of times you'll see your utility companies. You know, it'll be maybe, you know, Comcast Cable, but you make your payments to Comcast Holdings or something like that. That's not uncommon, and I don't think that's something you're going to have a issue with. You can make the payments while the card is active. You can make the payments to whoever they say. Now, if they sue you and it's somebody other than who you receive the card from, then you have an issue as far as the real party in interest.
Yeah, I'm current on everything, so they're not. I'm going to have to start the action against them because I haven't. I mean, I'm current.
What kind of action are you going to start for
well,
them just raising
the interest
rate? Well,
I don't know. If it was a debt collector and I really didn't owe the debt to them and there's just somebody collecting debt that isn't there. So I guess what I would do is send a debt validation letter and try to find out who I'm dealing with.
But okay, so I'm a little bit lost because you said, okay, so they said they wanted to raise your interest rate and they suspended your charging ability. So
they
it's not in debt collection. Uh-huh.
It's not in collection. They did that a year ago. They just they shut the card off and they raised the interest rate to 20%.
So have you been paying the payments?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're paying the payments. So what are you going to sue them for if you just don't like the interest rate and you think it's too high? Just pay the card off and go your separate way and get another card. I don't think you can sue them for raising the interest rate unless you've read the contract agreement and there's some sort of a breach or there's some language in there that states your interest rate will not go above 20%. If it's not above 20%, then they're within their right to raise it. And it may be based on, you know, a lot of times these things happen when you have a change in income or change in your credit score, or you might have acquired more credit or less, and they pull your credit reports quarterly, these credit card companies, because they know a lot of people are defaulting. So they will look and be like, okay, well, you added another $20,000 in debt, or you got a collection, or you was one payment late and your credit score changed, so we're going to adjust your interest rate, and we're also going to adjust your spending limit because we feel like there's a chance you may default. They can do that. They can do that. You know, that's within their right to protect themselves if they feel like, you know, you're taking on too much debt and they feel like they don't want that much exposure. Okay, what was your next question?
I understand. Okay, the second question is I have some mortgages, different mortgages, and some of the banks went to the FDIC, and then now I'm paying to somebody that I didn't originally have a contract with. And if it went through the FDIC, given what you've said and what I studied, I believe that I'm now dealing with debt collectors on those mortgages. Because
let's say you had a bank like Washington Mutual
or
some of the other banks. That's right,
receivership.
Right, and now, you know, the FDIC maybe got it, and, you know, FDIC, y'all know that's Federal Deposit Insurance Commission, and they most lending institutions, they're going to take over those institutions. And a lot of times, if you have $1 million, you can go on the FDIC website, and you can buy probably $5 million in defaulted debt, which is what the debt collectors do.
So
if it went through that process, receivership, Mm-hmm. Receivership, and it's been and they spit it out at the other end through a purchase and assumption agreement or something like that, then more than likely you do have some causes of action. If you audit your account properly, you may see that the loan was assigned while it was in default. That means that the bank went into receivership, meaning that they collapsed. And we don't know what the bank had when they collapsed. We don't know if they had already securitized those loans. Okay, so when they collapsed, they didn't take anything with them. So that means whoever acquired those alleged debt or was a successor in interest, you probably didn't acquire anything because they had nothing to acquire. The loan was already sold prior to, and that holds true in a BAC Countrywide deal. That holds true in a Washington Mutual Chase deal. You didn't acquire any loans, so I'm not going to pay you. Those loans were already sold prior to that bank collapsing and prior to you becoming a successor in interest. So, yes, if you had that situation, my brother, I would definitely say that you need to look into it. Now, pay your payments. Let me make you understand. Pay your payments until you understand where you're going because, exactly. You know, your credit is important. You know, don't – you know, I hear people say, oh, I'm going to stop making my payments. No, make your payments. And you know what? Go to court being current on a loan and see how you can eliminate – all that talk, well, this person just wants a free and clear house and they just don't want to pay. No, I'm current and I'm going to continue paying you, but I might decide to pay the payments to the court registry until a determination is made who you are. So I'm going to keep my obligation going. I'm not going to breach it because they may be a true creditor somewhere. I got to find them first. But until then, I'm going to keep paying. But, Judge, I need you to work this out and decide who is who because they won't answer my questions. They're dancing around. They're doing the Latin swing every time I send them a letter, and I'm becoming increasingly concerned that they're doing the Latin swing because they're not who they say they are.
I love you, Brother Sharif. You're right on, man. They've been doing the Latin swing with me. They've been transferring.
That's right.
And every time I send them a letter, I get somebody else.
They're going to transfer. They're scared of you, brother. So you got to be like, okay. So when you see that happen, just like your kids, when you ask them, did you come straight home from school? Well, I got off the bus, and then what happened was I got a piece of candy from that girl. And then, listen, I didn't ask you that. Did you come straight home? Ooh. So, you know, that's how it works. Well, we got 90 seconds left in the live stream. I'm going to move on. Thank you, brother, and keep it up. Keep studying. And you sound like, again, I'm getting a lot more callers that are taking this seriously and really studying this area. And once you focus on that, then I'm telling you, it's knowledge that's going to benefit you in the future and down the road because now you know how to look at things and say, oh, that don't seem right. I think I'm going to have to do me a little small action to kind of determine who it is. And you can just go to court and be like, Judge, they're not answering my questions. I mean, this is a mortgage. So I don't want to pay them for 15 years and then go down and decide I got a lump sum of money and then decide I want to pay it off and I determine I've been paying the wrong person. It is your job. There was a Supreme Court, I believe, in Georgia that said that it is your job to know who you're paying. It's your job, the consumer, to know who you're paying and make sure that party is the correct party. But thank you for your call, brother. I appreciate you and continue to join us and support us. All right? All right, we're going to come to the end here. We got 20 seconds left, maybe less. I appreciate everybody for showing up. Hopefully the show has provided you some information and the ability to be able to navigate this debt arena. Again, we appreciate your support. Please study before you take any action with any debt collector or any creditor. Please study, research. Please use the Legal Society. If you can find an attorney that will benefit you, that knows what they're doing, there are a few out there, or connect yourself with a group that is studying on this specific topic that may be able to provide you with some direction. This show is one of the venues or one of the opportunities you may have to do so. I thank you all for showing up. We'll see you next week, Tuesday, God's will, 11 o'clock. Keep it going. Thank you and have a good day.